You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Something's coming.
Stand by. Hold on to your hats. Here we go.
Welcome to the Screamcast, episode 117. I am Sean DeRager, and with me is BJ Colangelo.
Hello, hello, hello. Mm-hmm.
Also joining us is Brad Henderson.
Yep.
I love the enthusiasm, Brad.
Wow. All right. We have a pretty fantastic show for you today. We're going to be talking about a handful of Vinegar Syndrome releases. We've been trying like hell to get this podcast going for this episode. Normally we try to hit them every month. We're trying to do the July package, and then we're going to try to do the August package, and things got crazy, and schedules, and random interviews that Brad got that were awesome, we couldn't pass up, and so we have a little back catalog of Vinegar Syndrome to talk about. So we'll get to that in just a little bit. A couple house cleaning things. We got some enamel pins. Brad had this idea to do some enamel pins. And so those are up on the website.
Got to keep your pin game strong.
You do. This is new to me because I do not collect pins yet. But a whole new world has been opened
when
up.
When that addiction starts, it does not stop. I follow so many pin sites on Instagram. Like, my Instagram is just like film people, cute animals, porn stars, pins.
Nice. These were like, I was kind of on the fence of doing these, and then Brad kind of, you know, he's working with Omar. Is it Hauksen?
No, I'm just going to let you say it.
No, I mean, you know, Hauksen.
Yeah.
Is that right?
That's how I say it.
Okay. Omar, I apologize if you're listening, if I butchered your name. But Brad started showing me these designs and for pins, and I was like, well, shit, I guess we might as well try these. So we're giving them a try. We have Oily O'Bannon, which is from a series that Omar did, kind of inspired by Garbage Pail Kids and zombies. And then we have one we just put up on there called Bloody Ballet, inspired by Suspiria. So, $10 each, shipping included within that price. International, of course, we got to add on some more shipping. But they're over on the website, thescreamcast.com. Click on the shop or store button up there and grab those if you are keeping your pin game strong.
I need to buy the Bloody Ballet one to go with my... I have two Suspiria pins. I have one from Creepy Company that's the glass ceiling. And then I have one from Paul Bearer Press that's like the goblin cover with like the red one with the symbol on her forehead.
Nice.
So I need to get up on that.
So yeah,
everybody needs to.
Yeah, everybody should. Let's match. Let's be twinsies with our pinsies.
Yeah, the designs are so strong, and I was like, Brad was showing me, I was like, well, we might as well at least try it. So they're both limited to 100. It's an experiment. And, if you guys collect pins, I think they will be fun additions. Anyway, enough of that bullshit.
Bullshit.
I know, but yeah. I'm horrible at promoting our own stuff. Self-promotion, I'm horrible at. I'm getting better.
You're bad at all promotion. What are you talking about?
Let's jump into what's on our doorstep.
Holy cow, I almost forgot.
We'll get the door.
Pizza. Oh,
all right.
Okay. Yeah.
I only have two things on my doorstep because, as per usual, I'm in a show right now. I am in... Rehearsals for Silence, the musical, the unauthorized parody of Silence of the Lambs.
Nice.
Holy shit, it's funny. If anywhere around you ever does a production of Silence, like the rights just came out, so it'll probably start hitting regional theaters, go see it. It's raunchy and great. but because of that, I haven't gotten to see a whole lot, But this past weekend, I did a double feature at Cleveland's wonderful Capitol Theater, which is basically the closest thing Cleveland will ever get to having a draft house cinema. I saw a double feature of Phantasm Ravager was the first one. And, oh man, I really wanted to love Phantasm Ravager and just, it's a fun movie. There's a lot of heart in it. If you like Phantasm and if you like the characters, there's a lot of fan service that'll make you happy. But that movie is kind of a mess. I was a little intoxicated when watching it, so I had a great time. But after finishing it, I was just like, God, ugh, rough pumpkins. But I do love Reggie Bannister for forever and ever and ever. And I think that they do a lot with Phantasm Ravager that I think is kind of clever, but had they had a bigger budget and a lot more going for them, I think that it would have been a better final product. But all in all, like, I'm not disappointed that I saw it. I think if you like the franchise, if you like Phantasm, you definitely need to check it out. I think that it's a nice way to end kind of that story. So Phantasm Ravager. And it was followed by, which may end up being one of my favorite films of the year, The Greasy Strangler.
Mm.
I don't know how Brad felt about it, because I did not listen to his Fantastic Fest rants yet, so I'm curious, what did you feel about it, Mr. Henderson?
Well, I went on about it during the South by Southwest episode, because I saw it back in March.
Oh, that's right.
He's a hipster that way.
I forgot. You're so not fancy.
Not sure if that's accurate. No, I love it. I've watched it 3 times. I can't get enough.
I fucking loved it. I really loved this movie. It's just absurdist and interesting. And for somebody that is such a diehard kind of John Waters, Todd Solondz fan as I am, this, you know, was right in my wheelhouse. I had a fucking blast with it. And seeing it in a midnight screen was really nice. What was kind of disappointing is that the only people in the theater were my group of friends that came with me. So it was just like 9 of us with this entire theater to ourselves, which was almost a blessing because we were horribly inappropriate and we're all loud laughers. But we had a total fucking blast and we can't stop quoting it at each other. It's one of those movies that I think already is showing that it's going to have this massive following because it's just, it's so weird without being bad. Like, it's not weird bad like The Room. It's weird like a Pink Flamingos, honestly. Like, it's the closest thing to a modern, like, John Waters film I can feel. I love the characters. I love that everybody looks weird, but not, like, scary, you know, Giuseppe makes a movie weird. They're just, everybody has something a little off about them. But I fucking loved it. Loved it, loved it, loved it. Put Hootie Tootie Disco Cutie on my tombstone. This movie's amazing. It's probably going to be like in my top 3 of the year. That's just real talk.
It's probably the most quotable movie I've ever seen.
Oh my God. Like, the amount of times I've yelled bullshit artist at people in the last like 4 days, can't even count it.
I just like talking to people artist. And I say I'm shit scared.
I'm shit scared right now.
And then you put Big in front of everybody because they call him Big Braden.
Yeah.
it's just so many like little one-liners and shit. Like,
it is also the first movie in a very long time to make me audibly gag.
it's good.
Watching like the hot dog get dipped into like the retaining grease trap of like a hot dog stand, I gagged. Very, very loudly. Oh God, thinking about it makes me sick.
When we were at South by, there's a lot of people that walked out because mostly it's a lot of old, rich, pretentious assholes.
Which is weird because you wouldn't think that would be the scene at South by.
No one can fucking afford it. It's fucking $1,200 for a film badge. Like, that's true. Ridiculous. So like during the potato chip sequence. There was so many walkouts. So it's just like, one more time.
Porto. Excuse me? One more time. Porto.
Oh, and they my just, God.
They exchanged that. For the listeners that haven't seen it, they exchanged that for a good solid 2 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
They just keep doing that joke over and over. And to the point where you laugh at first, and then you're like, get uncomfortable because you're like, wait a second, this isn't funny. But like, 45 seconds in, you're like, holy shit, this is hilarious. Because they will not stop doing that one gag. And it's just like, and it works. Like, you know, and that's why I said, it's almost like the anti-movie as mm-hmm. well. It's like an anti-movie. It's like, we don't want to be a movie. We want to do our own fucking thing.
Yeah, it doesn't follow any of the conventional rules of comedy. Yeah. Like, you know, everyone always like, oh, it's the rule of thirds with comedy. And they're like, rule of third? How about the rule of 15? Because we're just going to keep saying the same shit. And it's still going to work. Like the bullshit artist scene goes on pretty fucking long. And it's, it doesn't stop being funny. It's still funny.
The first time that Braden fixes his dad that breakfast and he pours the grease, the camera pans back, but they just look at each other and they nod for like a good 30 seconds.
Yep.
And it's like, what is happening? Like, this scene should have ended like 20 seconds ago.
Award to the costume designer as well. Holy shit.
It's a lot of fun. It's not for everybody, I think.
No, not at all.
People that like John Waters, like, especially visually, like John Waters, people that like, you know, Tim and Eric's awesome show, like the type of comedy, because it hits that a lot. Like, I said it was a Napoleon Dynamite, Tim and Eric X-rated, like, mashup.
To me, it feels like they gave money to
insane
everyone.
People.
Well, that too. It feels like they gave money to people who have only ever watched the stuff they show on Adult Swim at 3 a.m. Like, they were like, what? That's the only thing you've ever seen? Make a movie.
Yeah. But wow. It's great. Yeah.
Yeah. I loved it. So those were my two doorsteps. I am excited that on Saturday I'm doing 12 hours of terror, at the Capitol. Oh, I did actually notice one thing briefly that I'll talk about. So I went to the drive-in this weekend as well. They always do a quadruple feature for $9. And this time it was Killer Clowns from Outer Space, Halloween, Friday the 13th, and Candyman. Wow. And all these people left before Candyman because they fucking racist. But Candyman is a movie that I've never thought of seeing in a drive-in, ever. Like, Halloween and Friday the 13th, that makes sense. Killer Clowns, like, that kind of makes sense because it's like a fun popcorn movie. Candyman and the drive-in played really well.
Cool.
Really, really well. Like, I have, you know, a newer car now, so I have a really nice sound system. The bass in my car rattled when Tony Todd comes out of the parking lot and does his Helen. And it was one of the most horrifying things I've ever experienced. Like, my whole car is shaking and it's just Tony Todd billowing. I was like, fuck, this is an amazing movie to watch in the drive-in. So yeah, I highly suggest watching Candyman with the bass up in your house because it'll scare the shit out of you.
No.
Yep. Do it. No.
I'm just gonna watch Candyman. I'll listen to the soundtrack. I'm not a Candyman fan.
I know.
I've tried like 3 or 4 times too, but I love that Philip Glass soundtrack. But I can't do Candyman.
I'm a fan.
What's crazy is that the Candyman soundtrack is like the only good thing Philip Glass has done. His operas are terrible.
Whoa!
Sorry, I went there. I did it. Yeah, what are you gonna do about it? Nothing.
We're gonna have a Philip Glass talk on a later podcast.
Oh shit!
We're gonna have Philip Glass on.
Put a pin in that.
Philip Glass on. All right. Yeah, that's all I got, folks.
All right. All right. I'll go ahead and go.
Okay, Sean, go.
I'll burn through these. I finally got around to watching the Scream Factory a release of The Return of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like giving them a hard time that they were re-releasing these types of movies because I was like, well, you know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 and then Return of the Living Dead. Like, they've already had a couple, you know, Blu-ray releases. But, I mean, they really like have taken these and given them like the love that they deserve. I mean, they've all the extras on here, and especially the new extras on here, were just really fun. it was like, I think it was like Saturday afternoon. My kids were playing video games. And I just popped this in and started watching all the special features, and they just did a fantastic job with it. So if you're on the fence with buying this, I know it was our, John Pornanova chose this as one of our discs of the week. Grab it. It's definitely worth it. They're doing new scans.
Like if they re-release stuff again on Blu-ray, like they were doing for a long time, it's bullshit artist. But you know, if you do this, if you're doing new scans, like they're doing with Texas Chainsaw Massacre, they're doing the interpositive.
Yeah.
It looks great. Like I'm okay with that. Cause honestly, the original Return of the Living Dead Blu-ray looks like fucking
horrible.
Pee.
And I had the second
like
sight
someone
one.
Peed on it.
Yeah, the second sight one looked a little bit better. But they've given the final release. You know what I mean? Like this is the end all be all, hopefully, release of this movie. It's stacked. It's really good. The artwork's great. So anyway, I just wanted to give that a shout out. If you're on the fence of buying it, I found it at Best Buy one day. I was walking through Best Buy and I was like, holy shit! And because Best Buy is actually starting to stock some of these, so I grabbed this and then I grabbed What else did I grab? Anyway.
Your dick.
I'll get to that at a later time. When I watch it. Oh, Buckaroo Banzai. I grabbed that. Next up, I want to talk about really quick is the Blu-ray release of Constantine, the complete series. Now, this is a DC comic book character. But he's like an exorcist. And the only thing I ever
really liked that show.
Really? Huh?
I really liked that.
Yeah,
show.
No, I've watched the first episode. It's fantastic. It's great. Because all I really knew was like the Keanu Reeves movie, which was just, you know, it's a piece of shit. It's an enjoyable piece of shit, but it's a piece of shit. But this one, like, they get the character right. It's played straight. It's good. Have you seen Constantine, Brad?
But the movie's great. What are you talking about?
The movie's ridiculous, but I love it. But it's stupid.
No.
Oh, Sean.
No.
Keanu Reeves is absolutely awful as Constantine.
No.
No, he's not. But
what are you talking about?
I don't know. Well, anyway.
Dude, Constantine's like one of my favorite movies of like 2005.
It's okay. Like, you know, agree to disagree. I like it as a dumb popcorn flick, but for me, like, it's not a good movie.
Dude, fucking Gavin Rosdale's awesome. What are you talking about? Dude.
Dude. Anyway, the series is great. It only got one season, but I'm digging it so far. I can't wait to finish watching it. And
Matt
Ryan plays a really good John Constantine.
I want to know the general consensus of what people think about Constantine, because I have a feeling that it's a really, really, really well liked movie.
It's a super polarizing movie, actually. Yeah.
So
people either really love it and think like this is great, this is fun, this is awesome, or people are like this is a hot garbage train wreck.
I have fun watching it as a hot garbage train wreck.
Like they either love it or they think it's shit.
So I don't know. That's just me. Move on. Let's move on to another polarizing film here. I finally watched The Shallows. Starring Blake Lively.
I knew you were going to do that to me.
And, you know, I mean, it's kind of marketed. It's marketed as this really tense, you know, surfer versus shark, you know, realistic type thing, right? How it's marketed, right? And,
dude, just say that Voodoo
has... This
is
a really good description.
Voodoo has fucking determined the genre of this movie because I rented it and I was like looking under horror and I couldn't find it. That shit's under drama.
Drama.
I watched it. I was like, dude, this is so fucking right. It's such a fucking drama. It's pathetic.
It is. I mean, for what it is, I liked it. I didn't think it was scary. I think I legitimately liked.
You think
about half of the movie. But then it kind of like it turns into kind of like this monster movie, basically, and like the finale is so ridiculous.
It's incredible, is the word you're looking.
That I mean, I kind of like it, but I'm like torn. I like need to watch this again. I liked it for what it was, but it wasn't the movie that I felt like I was being sold. through the trailers. And that's so what that's I heard, not, heard people
that's
talking
not the
about.
Movie's fault. That's the marketing's fault. Right. And that is your own fault for having preconceived notions of walking into a film.
But Blake Lively's great. She's, you know, she's great in the role. Like, there are some
You're allowed
moments.
To say she has a good butt, Sean. Like, no one's going to burn you to the stake.
Well, she's super hot. She looks great. But I'm, you know, but you know, someone was saying like, oh, the camera lingers on Blake Lively, and they were complaining, that's sexist, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, I didn't think that they were taking advantage of her.
No,
like,
it's very much from the male gaze, which I know is hard for you to know because you're a guy.
Is it?
So
okay.
You have a male gaze.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it lingers the fuck on her. I'm not complaining because I'm a pervert, but.
Yeah, but do you know how many shots of her on her surfboard laying on her stomach filming from behind her there are?
A billion.
Well, yeah, but she's a surfer.
It doesn't
so if it was
matter,
a dude,
dude.
You'd
the
be
movie's about
dude,
a fucking shark.
Yeah, here's the thing, though, Sean. Yeah, she's a surfer, but you can also show her from the front on her board.
True.
You don't have to shoot her ass.
And the only time they show her in the front is when she's in her bikini putting on her
correct.
Fucking swimsuit.
Male gaze.
All right,
but anyways.
All right. Well, man, for what it is, I liked it for what it is.
What are you choking on? Fucking salt water?
I know. I was disappointed overall by it, but I liked it for what it ended up to be.
No.
However, the ending is redonkulous.
It's great.
I very, very seldom, and you know this for a fact, and you can listen to every 100 and fucking whatever episodes we're on, I hardly ever, ever talk shit about a movie. The Shallows is by far one of the worst films I've seen this year.
Wow. Dude.
And I've seen over 700 movies this year.
I don't think it's that bad. I mean, it's a B movie shark movie.
No, it's not. It's not a B movie. I saw a lot of people after I watched it. I saw a lot of people say that you have no idea what a B movie is if you categorize this as a B movie. There's nothing
B movie
about it.
Do you know what it is?
It's a fucking F. You get an F.
All right, let's let BJ talk.
The Shallows is. The people who make the Lifetime real crime dramas trying to make a shark movie.
There you go. That's a pretty good.
That's what it is.
That's
and
that's an accurate
I'm
description.
The queen of
drama.
Lifetime movies. So you know damn well how I feel about The Shallows in that case. I think it's great. I had a blast. I thought it was absolutely ridiculous.
I mean,
and I like it.
It almost lost me when she's in the fucking truck in the beginning and we have to look at her fucking telephone. Her cell phone screen through the majority of the like first 5 minutes.
Well,
give me a fucking break. No, it's such a. She's just staring at fucking pictures. Like, can't she just have Polaroids in her? They're Polaroids. Brain. They're Polaroid pictures. She took a picture. She took a picture of a Polaroid picture.
Yes.
Fucking put those in your fucking bag.
But they might get wet. She's a surfer. They might.
They're fucking Polaroids.
Yeah, they might get wet. So let's put it on your cell phone, which is going to do great in water, Sean.
Puts it in a baggie.
Dude.
Oh, my God.
No, everything about that movie is just fucking. Like, the only props that I give the film is that when the shark very first hits her board and you see it in the wave, I thought that was pretty cool.
Cool shot. Yep.
Yeah,
and then
really
one
good.
Of the. And one of the very first surfers, when that shark just fucking comes out of nowhere and bites him, spoiler. that
is supposed to say spoiler beforehand, but
it's great. Like, but that's 20 seconds of the movie. I like 20 seconds of The Shallows. Therefore, I would have gave it like half of a half star. But I gave it a half star.
Wow. I would give this a solid 3 stars. It's
no,
all right.
Jesus Christ.
Right. 10 out of 10. Perfect movie.
All right. Moving along
it's
here.
Like a
this is probably another polarizing movie. I don't know.
Jesus
Brad,
Christ.
You talked about it. But I watched The Purge Election Year.
Oh, God.
Yes.
And,
yes.
For, you know, for what it is, the series, like the Purge series, it is what it is. Like, I was kind of hoping for a little more, maybe satire in the political arena.
Oh, you didn't get enough of that being shoved in your face?
I guess I didn't notice it because it just felt more of like a retread of the second one, which is fine.
But Grillo, I think the second one.
No, I think Grillo's like neutered in this movie. Like
he's not playing captain. They just should have put somebody else in that role. They ruined that character.
Yeah, because they totally. He's not the badass he was in the second one. He's playing.
He only shows it one time.
Yeah,
when he's actually fighting the, you know, hey, let's get some Nazis to play. What a fucking crock of shit! Like you fucking hire white power Nazis as fucking military with fucking helicopters? Are you fucking serious? Where do they find a bunch of white power fucking radicals to pilot helicopters and have military vehicles? If they're supplied by the fucking military, like. You know,
would you like me to tell you where you find that? Because all you have to do is go on one of fucking Donald Trump's tweets and scroll to the replies, and I will find you a goddamn militia.
Yeah.
So here's the thing, is that I really disliked the first Purge. I really, really hated it. And the reason why was because even like how crazy the plot is, mm-hmm. and I'm cool with it. I like the 12-hour thing. Once a year, I can dig it because my suspension disbelief, I can do that.
Yeah.
My problem is kind of the carelessness of the killers not caring if they lived or died, because still in that situation, like they're still human beings. They have day jobs probably. They're normal people, but they didn't give a fuck about their friends dying, whether people are coming after with shotguns. They just, whatever, swinging their knives in the air, doing whatever. The second one cleared all that up.
Mm-hmm.
And it got really serious, and even the killers were afraid to die. That's what I liked about it, because that felt more real. And I did like how they got a little political, but also left a lot of that open that didn't have to say, oh, yeah, this is why we're doing it. You know, you obviously could tell the reason why, and the second one, why the Purge was created. Meanwhile, we had a couple linear stories that were really, really cool that, you know, you basically intertwined and got together, and we had a good group of people that we really liked along meeting crazier people.
Right.
And we also had this huge, like, fucking, you know, Malcolm X character that was really essential and really great, you know? Fuck the new founded fathers!
Yeah.
Like, that's great. This one goes right back to the fucking first one and just wants to get silly. And that's what I didn't like about it.
Yeah, I mean,
it's so silly.
I felt like there wasn't enough meat on the bone on the third one. Like the second one set it up really nicely with all that, and this one, like they could have had even more with, you know, with the president candidate. Although I think she's a little bit too young to be running for president, in my opinion. I don't know.
It is. I mean, I can allow stuff like that. I'm not gonna ding a movie for little things like that. It's just that there's a lot of things that bothered me, because I thought the second film cleared it up.
Yeah.
And it's actually BJ was the reason why I watched the second one. Do you know that, BJ?
Dude, I fucking love the second one, and I've
No, but you're the reason why I watched it.
I didn't realize that I was the reason. That makes me excited, though.
Because I watched the first one and I was done, because I really, really, really disliked the first Purge. Like, I fucking hated it. Like, it's a little bit better than The Shallows. So when the second one came out, I was like, whatever. But I actually had lunch with you and Zach when I was up visiting in Cleveland, and you said something that piqued my interest. You said if John Carpenter basically directed the Purge movie, that's kind of what it feels like. It feels like an escape from New York. And I was like, all right, I'm down. So I watched it as soon as I got back home, and that movie is 5 stars by far. I fucking loved it. I watch it over and over and over. So when I heard Election Year was coming out, I was pretty fucking amped, because I figured they would dive more into kind of what 2 was doing. And it feels like they just regressed and just went completely backwards.
Yeah.
And they got to the point of being too silly for me. Like, they just couldn't have military. They have to be Nazis. Like, they have to have white power on their fucking military uniforms.
Yeah. I don't know. Were they actually?
And the guy, like the main guy, takes off his fucking mask and he's got tattoos. Like those, I know those guys. That's what people have. But where are these people coming from?
See,
why
I,
when they have a
I
shootout in a garage, no glass breaks? That's another thing that really pissed me off.
I completely disagree with you guys in the sense, okay, so I do believe that the second film is like the perfect one of that trilogy. I like Election Year a lot more than I like the first one. And I know that the whole white power Nazis seems pretty far-fetched and ridiculous, but part of the beauty of The Purge as a franchise is that the message they're delivering is extremely heavy-handed, and it's because it has to be, because the target audience for these films are fucking idiots. Like, these are the people that don't understand that Black Lives Matter doesn't necessarily mean that all lives aren't important and only black ones matter. That's not what it fucking means. But the people watching this movie think that because they're idiots. So they have to have this message be as spoon-fed on a silver platter as possible. And how do you do that? You say, this is an allegory for racism. Here's white power. And that's why they're using it. Because otherwise, people aren't going to fucking get that. They're like, oh, right, this means that the government's corrupt. But it's the message.
All right.
That's
why.
No, I'm just saying, like, because I know that, like, 20 years from now, I'm going to be that, like, weirdo, like, horror academic that's going to write a book about the importance of The Purge in the time of the new millennium, because I do think that these films are extremely important because it's one of the few franchises that is accepting our audiences are fucking idiots. And we have to do it this way. Right. And I respect them for owning that.
Well, I mean, I love the idea, the whole idea of the Purge movies I love. And I feel like they almost need to keep just new characters each time. I think bringing Frank Grillo's character, carrying him over was a mistake. Because you didn't really need him to be that character, you know. And if they... just these nights are so crazy as it is 12 hours that there's so many stories that they can tell, you know, and every time there's a new Purge movie, I'm going to see it until this thing runs out of steam, because I still like the idea.
Steam gone.
I agree. I think that there's a lot of different ways and angles that they can take this that I'm surprised. Like, I understand why they did Election Year, because of obviously it's the same reason you're going to do a Killer Shark movie on the 4th of July kind of a thing. It's just smart marketing. But I'm hoping that once this election dies down and hopefully we aren't in a society run by Trump, but who knows? I'm hoping that the Purge then jumps back into kind of what they were trying to tell with the second one, mm-hmm. because I really do feel like they were like, we need to do something with the election because that's where we have this window. Right. And I think that kind of stifled the creativity a little bit. Yeah. So I'm hoping that – I think The Purge is going to be one of those series where it's going to be like, here's the one that we're making simply to make money. Now here's the one we're making to tell the story. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to end up being like that. And I think that they could probably squeeze two or three more out of it before it's going to just get – really monotonous, but I think that the concept is still so fresh and mm-hmm. interesting that they have plenty of room to play around with.
Nice. All right, I got a couple more here and I'm done.
Jesus.
Brad turned me on to these classic cult collection Blu-rays from Germany. I grabbed The Giver. I had a handful, but I watched The Giver. It's going to be coming out on Arrow, and I pre-ordered that too, but I was curious about this one because this was the director's cut. And had a lot of fun watching it. It's been forever since I've seen this movie, so there's like things that I totally forgot. There's a scene where that they end up on a movie set. And are you guys there?
Yeah, it sounds really funky though.
Yeah, it's coming through weird in my okay, there we go. But they end up like running through a movie set and one of the guys jumps over the wall, and like there's this guy kind of helping him down, and I was like, is this a mistake? Like, did they get accidentally get a crew member in the shot as he's helping the guy down the wall? But it turns out I was a bit confused on that. The humor of the film kind of caught me off guard because it's been forever since I've seen this. So when you're a kid, when you're younger, it doesn't seem as goofy. But have a lot of fun.
I took that shit fucking seriously, dude.
Huh?
I was a little kid. I fucking took that shit seriously. Hell yeah. And then
anyway,
rewatching it when I was like a teen, I was like, "Wait a second, this is a fucking comedy."
It's silly. Produced by Brian Usna, But the creature effects are fun. It's, you know, it's a fun flick. I'm excited to see what Arrow does with all this, you know, special features and stuff. But anyway, I'm a fan of this one. I haven't seen, I think there's a sequel. I haven't seen that, but it's just, you know, men in these creature costumes and everything like that. It's a lot of fun, a lot of cool little creature effects in it. So if you haven't seen it or if you've kind of passed it off, you know, it's a goofy little, you know, it's not made for adults. It's made for teenagers and kids. It's PG-13. And the director's cut doesn't have anything insanely gory. It's just a few extra little things. And Brad, you were saying that they use like VHS or something to fill in for the director's cut.
There's a couple of VHS sequences.
But it's very, not very noticeable. Like, you know, they're very small little slivers cut in. So you can tell, but it's, you know, it's over quick. But I think the Arrow version is not the director's cut. So, which is why I got this, because I wanted to compare. But anyway, it was like, I think like $8 or $9 from Amazon Germany. So I got a handful of these German flicks that I'm sure I'll be diving into shortly. But if you're on a budget and you want the Guyver, grab that from Amazon Germany. And finally, I watched a movie that was created for $250. Intervision put out the DVD of the Canexploitation sci-fi flick called Phobe, The Xenophobic Experiments.
Yeah.
And this was made in 1994 in Canada. Our main character, who's the actor, sadly passed away in a car accident in 2003, apparently. He's rocking a awesome 90s era mullet, spiky on top, long in the back.
Yes. And
I was expecting this to just be, you know, a struggle to get through. And I've seen plenty of shot on video stuff.
No, you haven't.
Not as much as Brad, but I've seen plenty and enough.
You need to take that back.
To know that it's not my, generally shot on video is not my thing. I'm not, you know, it's just, I don't know. But I mean, I was raised on Spielberg. I was spoiled, raised on Spielberg movies and Star Wars and stuff like that.
So you're an elitist fuck, is what you're trying to say.
It ruined your vision of movies.
It probably did. However, what I preface that by saying, like, this movie was so much fun. Even though you've seen clips of it, you kind of wonder, like, oh, this is, you know, what the heck is going on here? But it's like the director has such a clear vision of what she wanted, and she obviously knew how to cut a movie. And she knew how to get, you know, to get a decent score for the film. Like, this movie moves along. The music's actually really good. And even though, like, you know, these guys are basically doing this for next to nothing and they're having fun doing it. And, it's very amateur. It's a lot of fun to watch. I had a blast watching Phobe. Like, I was surprised. I was dreading putting this in. Cause when I got this, when this came in the mail, I was like, oh crap. And then Intervision. Okay. And so I was dreading watching this, and then Intervision contacted me, you know, when are you going to talk about it, when are you going to write the review? And I was just like, oh shit, I guess I better watch this. But I had way more fun.
Don't make it sound like a chore or anything.
Sometimes when you're, you know, you know
when
you never
you're
know what
dead
you're getting.
And you have all these kids and you have a life.
Well, you have a... I want to watch shit that I want to watch, you know? So, but this was fun. Like, I was surprised how much I loved it. There's some great extras on here about the making of the film. Like, you just end up really kind of falling in love with the filmmakers, too, and everything. So if you're a fan of Shauna video stuff, if you're a fan of kind of just wacky, low budget films, low budget sci-fi, this actually comes highly recommended for me. A lot of fun. Brad, you saw this, right? You saw this on the screen somewhere?
No, I saw it, just a couple years ago. Josh Johnson, who actually did the kind of short documentary on the disc.
Okay.
He turned me on to it, I think maybe a couple years ago. He asked me if, you know, we were just talking about shot on video stuff because that's one of my shot on video friends. And he asked me if I've ever seen it. I said, nah. He's like, dude, he's like, these kids made this movie. It took them like a year to make it. And already I was like hooked. I was like, all right, cool. Because I've watched David the Rock Nelson movies, which are 8 hours long, and he filmed on a, you know, VHS tape. And that's an endurance test. And I'm not kidding when I say his movies are 8 hours long. So I was like, I was totally down. And plus, as soon as it started, I was already happy because, you know, I think even Josh said this. It feels like the movie you'd make with your friends when you were like 12.
Yeah.
You know, as like a total geek making you know, a geeky homage-esque sci-fi flick. And, I mean, it has – and the thing is that, you know, it might be cheap, but, you know, imagine if you would have gave these kids, like, money and a budget, what they would be able to do. Because they are so smart with what they did and what they used. And, like I said, a year of filming. And, yeah, the continuity is a little off at times.
But that kind of comes with the territory of most
Video things. I mean, you fucking filmed a movie over a year, you'd expect, you know, probably even a lot more. But I think it's one of those things you don't even notice it because you're so into the movie. You know, it's, you know, I did a little segment on Splathouse, Mike Delaney's podcast, which is great, by the way. You guys need to listen to it if you're listening to this episode. It's like really well produced though, and it's like sounds really good.
God damn those guys.
Fuck so anyways, he asked me to do like kind of a little thing talking about shot on video movies. And I said in the shot on video, little segment, you know, and this is what I've always thought watching shot on video movies. It, you know, you're watching a movie, but at the same time, you feel like you're watching a movie like you made. And you're watching it and you feel like your friends did it or maybe you even helped out, you know, and you feel like you're part of it. It's just how I always felt. And that's why I really, really love shot on video stuff because it reminds me of watching home movies and like growing up with my family. My mom would always have the video camera out. So she videotaped everything and our home video collection at my parents' house is like, you know, fucking 300 tapes. It's ridiculous. They're all 8 hours a piece. It's crazy. So, but whenever we're hanging out,
that's what my grandma's house was like. And, so beautiful.
So like, sorry. Whenever we're like, no, it's fine. It's awesome. It's just that when like during Christmas time or holidays, like when family comes in, the very first thing that we say is go get a home video and we'll take one and we'll put it on. Cause my family's crazy. So every video is like hilarious and we have a couple that are really stand out because like the whole thing's funny. And even like we've had like, you know, I had a girlfriend over at the time or, you know, friends, my dad will put them on while my friends are there. And like, we're talking just to show like how crazy our family is. And like people that had no idea who these people are were cracking up, you know, this because of how idiotic my family is. All that said, watching shot on video stuff, it takes me back to a much simpler time. And even when I was renting movies as a kid at Video Time in Akron, Canton, Ohio, it's Akron and Canton, but there's like side by side, renting like stuff like Things and fucking, you know, The Last Slumber Party, renting stuff like that and then watching it, I was like, wait a second, why does this look like I made it? What is that, a microwave?
Zach is making me dinner because I haven't eaten since noon.
Good job, Zach.
Good job, Zach. So watching those movies, like I was sitting there, even as a young kid, not knowing, I had no idea what shot on video was. I just was like, I remember watching it for the first time. I think I was watching... Shit, it's, God damn it. I wish I could, it'll come to me, I'll tweet it out or something. But I was watching it, and I was like, man, why does this look so funny? You know, and like, I'm watching it, and I'm like, oh. You know, I was even noticing, I was like, this looks like a movie that somebody made, like, you know, as, with a video camera. You know, I was like fucking 8 or 9 at the time, so I'm like thinking, oh my God, somebody... like had a camera and made this movie like at home and, you know, they put it on the shelf at Video Time. Like, what is happening? you know, not knowing that this was a whole thing that people did. And, you know, that's kind of my gateway into it. Because I would rent more, you know, rent all these horror films there. And, you know, some I'd get The Burning, and then I would get Things. Or, you know, I get, you know, Beware Children at Play, and then I would get Midnight Intruders, which is a softcore shot on video horror film, which is weird. I watched that when I was like 10. That was the best night ever. but watching those things like that, it just, like, it always made me feel at home. So that's my experience with shot on video. So that's when I watch it, like, it makes me feel good inside, because that's what I would have done at that time to try to get a movie made. Now, if you do it, you know, if you make shot on video now, it's just like, you pretentious dick. Get your fucking iPhone out. Like, don't shoot on video. Because the reason why those guys shot on video is because they literally had no choice.
Yeah, it was the cheapest thing, the most accessible thing that they can do.
You couldn't fucking buy, like, fucking Kodak, you know, right. 16 tape and fucking then fucking have it edited and cut and then maintain the quality of the tape, transporting it back and forth. There was no fucking, they didn't have access to labs and shit. You know, it was like, oh, just get out your fucking camera that you bought for $500 that weighs 50 pounds.
I saw a short the other day that was in 4:3 that was made in like 2014. And I shut it off. I was pissed. I was like, you're dumb.
Yeah, no, it's like you're not hitting, it's not nostalgia. Like, I don't feel that shot on video is nostalgic at all. I believe, I look at it and it's like, wow, these guys really had heart. They put so much into this and they wanted to make some grand movie to compete with, you know, these other Friday the 13th films and stuff like that, all this well-produced stuff. And it's like, hey, you guys, what are you guys doing this weekend? Oh, nothing. You want to shoot a movie? Sure. And the guys never acted again. Some of them never directed again. They made a movie. For some ungodly reason, someone picked it up, you know, gave it distribution. Sadly, you know, all those things died, and there's hundreds of shot-on-video movies that are lost. But, you know, every once in a while, something like this survives and gains a cult following. I mean, this was made in 95, so it was, I think...
It was 94, and it was like, it was,
they, it was made for, they, it got, I remember, Josh saying that this was put on public access in Canada.
Yeah, they had $250, they had a lot of people kind of just donate stuff, the community really kind of rallied around it, they got, put it onto the public access just to fill time, and then all of a sudden people started, like, calling in to request that the public access played, and it just kind of got more and more popular after that. I mean, the story is pretty great. It's just really fun hearing them all talk about it because they never did it much afterwards. I think the director did. I mean, I think her first movie's on here, and it's just great. I mean, it made me want to kind of just get out and gather some people and just make something. You know what I mean?
Shoot it on your iPhone though. Don't do it on
shoot day. On the iPhone. You gotta do that. But
yeah, don't be a pretentious asshole.
But yeah, I mean, it was a lot of fun. Like the Intervision did a great job bringing, you know, Severin. They're a offshoot of Severin. Just did a really good job with this, and I was very happy to be. I mean, the story is very, you know, very classic sci-fi. There's a, you know, there's like a predator type, you know, alien being chased by a space cop, and of course they end up on Earth, right? And there's a great scene where, like...
Wait, are you talking about Phobe or are you talking about Dark Angel?
Phobe.
It was a joke.
Yeah. No, like I said, it's... the story is very basic, but there's a scene like where they're being chased by the Phobe. And I love that they call it Phobe. And they go into like a dance or somewhere, and they just start dancing, like this cop and the girl that he's, you know... hanging out with, trying to save or whatever, and they just dance for a little bit, have a little breather, you know, and it's just, and then of course the alien shows up again, and I don't know, it's just a lot of fun. There's a lot of heart to it, and they obviously you know, had a lot of fun making it, and it very much, you feel that through the film, and it makes it that much more enjoyable. But yeah, I thought I was gonna hate this thing, ended up loving it. So all right, Brad, what do you have?
Oh, probably, man. 45 things.
Yeah, it's close. So next up, I've got some Wild Eye releasing titles here, which I'm always a big fan of Wild Eye. And I've kind of put their catalog on hold because I get just too overwhelmed with life and movies. So I
They're
started
usually one of the more consistent companies,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. As you say that while eating. Are you eating?
Dude, I haven't eaten all day. I have nachos in my mouth. You're fucking welcome.
So, this was, first up is Hotel Inferno, which, is pretty insane. There was a lot of talk when Hardcore Henry came out, because Hardcore Henry claimed to be the first, you know, kind of POV, you know, film. Entire POV. But Hotel Inferno did it first. But if you look back, the director of Hardcore Henry did a music video before Hotel Inferno, almost a year. So it kind of, I think Hotel Inferno got the idea from the music video. But this is technically the first action horror film, that's, entirely POV. A lot of fun though, because Hardcore Henry just doesn't do it for me. It's just way too many gags, and you literally can watch the extended trailer and you see every single thing that happens in the movie. Like, there's nothing, like, there's nothing left to surprise you. It's like, oh wow, cool, that was a cool scene, wow, that was really neat too, but there's actually no story. Same thing with Hotel Inferno. It's not really much of a story. However, you get to watch him battle zombies and use a chainsaw, and or actually, yeah, he uses a chainsaw, uses guns, uses grenades, you know, and it's just, it's amateur filmmaking, but also trying to do something a little more creative without having, you know, millions of dollars, kind of like how Hardcore Henry had. But I suggest if you do like Wild Eye stuff, which I highly recommend, because they hit different, like you say consistent and you're right, but the movies are so different at times, but they pick stuff that's not picked up. Like, I guess people don't have the balls to pick up some of the titles that they do. I guess that would be the way to say it, because the films are good. It's just, how do you market them? Like, have you seen Swamp Head, BJ?
No, I haven't. But I did want to say that when Zach brought me food, he could, like, overhear kind of the conversation. He heard you talking about Hardcore Henry being disappointing. And he goes, tell him to watch Hotel Inferno instead.
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, Zach tweeted the other day about it, and I remember having it. And I saw it when it very, very first came out, because it really appealed to me. But I watched it again. Because number one, Wild Eye sent it to me, and number two, like, Zach was like, oh, I haven't seen that, I want to talk about that on the show. But, a lot of fun, I highly recommend it. The voiceover's a little goofy, but it makes up with it with the gore and fight sequences and shotgun blasts the head and exploding heads and everything exploding, 100%. Next up is another Wild Eye releasing. I don't know what to say about this because I do not know what to say. I literally don't. We talked about some shot on video just a second ago, and this is actually directed by a, you know, he made some shot on video. He made, God, fuck. And now I forgot. I have to actually look it up. I want to say Splatter Farm. Maybe that's it. Let's check. Let me look it up. I'm pulling a Sean. What is that? Is that like a? All right. So let's. I just want to verify before I say something like silly. No, because that's not Donald Farmer. He didn't direct Splatter Farm. So anyways, I watched Shark Exorcist.
Oh boy.
Wow.
So
I haven't seen this, but the title, I'm already intrigued and I need to know more.
So Donald Farmer made some shot on video films, Vampire Cop, the legendary Demon Queen, that was one of the most sought after video VHS tapes ever, eventually released by Massacre Video, again, to get it out there. And he did also some kind of, like, I Spit on Your Grave spinoffs. I think, like, Savage Vengeance was a movie. It basically, they have, like, the same cover as I Spit on Your Grave, I think. It's been a while. So anyways, when Donald Farmer was making a new movie, I was like, yikes. Like, what is that going to be like? And it's weird. Because it's literally Donald Farmer making a shot on video movie without a VHS, without a VC, without a VHS recorder, with digital. And it's absurd. It really is. It's entertaining enough to think that this is actually something that he created in his head. Now, I'm not sure if he, I believe he, let me look at the back here. Yeah, he did write it. So you're talking about a guy, and it's only 70 minutes, so you're welcome, people. It feels like 3 hours, though. You're talking about a guy that has made low-budget movies pretty much all his life and has loved what he's doing and has never, ever stopped. And he made films in, you know, the 80s, into the 90s, 2000s. Like, the guy never gave up, and he makes what he wants to. Like, it's not one of those things like, man, this guy just can't catch a break. No, these are the movies that he makes. So there's a lot of respect in the sense of, like, obviously he was like, oh man, people love sharks. I'm going to do a shark movie. What's the most ridiculous thing I can think about? Oh, Shark Exorcist. But I want to say...
Shark Exorcist sounds like one of those titles that you get from, like, those Facebook things that go around that's like, your birthday month and the last letter of your name. Like, that doesn't sound like a real thing at all.
Well, I bet it was one of those things, because I can only imagine sitting in a room with the filmmakers and they're trying to think of a, you know, a tagline. And then the tagline is said, and then I think that everybody was like, okay, we have the movie now. The tagline the tagline is, Satan has Jaws. And I was like, how perfect is that?
That's pretty incredible.
It's definitely better than the movie. But if you enjoy really, like, even Beelzebub, if people, I'll imagine only like three people probably know what I'm talking about right now. He has a movie called, like, Dick Shark. And, yes, you know.
He sure does, and I sure own it.
You know, he makes movies every weekend and then puts them out every other weekend. But it's the same thing as that guy. He makes movies for these, like, few fans that he has, and he's making movies because he enjoys what he's doing. So when you watch them, you have a different, you're viewing the movie differently, because the same thing as when, you know, if you showed me Shark Exorcist and it was a first time director, I would throw the movie back at you and say, wow, Satan Has Jaws is a really good tagline, but this movie is not very good. But knowing that it comes from Donald Farmer and the guy just makes movies that he wants to and he enjoys it, I kind of get a kick out of that. I don't know. It's a different viewing experience. So next up is another Wild Eye releasing, is The Neon Dead, which is super fucking fun. It's got a killer cover. And surprisingly enough, this, like, the creatures in this movie are really fucking cool. If you took, like, some really, really fucked up Purge masks and, you know, had, like, bright eyes in them, it's really cool. But this is actually a comedy and a funny one, mainly because I say that is because I don't really laugh at comedies too much. So it's basically a lady, she finds out that there's these zombie things in her house. So she calls a guy who works at a video store who basically has a business to get rid of these zombie-esque things. Very humorous. He has a buddy that tags along, and they're like, there's this whole story of exposition of where these things come from, you know, basically who they're commanded by. And the guy just kind of wants to kill him. And the other guy, like, you know, is one of those friends that, you know, you would say Ouija board, and they would say, oh, it's actually Ouija. There's one of those people, like, that always, okay, like, is your horror elitist, or, like, has to know everything about the occult or something like that. So he's, like, constantly, like, telling them, hey, this is what's actually happening. This is what we need to do. It's just kind of a, like, a buddy horror thing, but, you know, obviously done on a budget, but really well done. Great, you know, great creature effects, because you could have easily just done zombies, but they did, like, this neon shit with them. And I thought that was pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, Wild Eye has some really fucking cool titles, and it's definitely not for everybody. It's like a step above shot on video stuff, but it's like stuff like Swamp Head, and they did a really great throwback film that they did called Scream Park. That's a lot of fun. But yeah, I highly recommend checking out their catalog if you enjoy stuff like that. It's like almost like a better Troma, put it that way. Better Troma. Anything's better than Troma, though. What am I talking about? Next up was a Dark Sky Films release. This movie got a lot of fucking buzz at Toronto After Dark, and I heard a lot of people talk about it, so I was really excited to see it, because I looked at the front and I was like, man, like, this is like Jim Van Bebber and fucking John Carpenter type shit. Like, I'm looking at it. It's called The Demolisher. I mean, already I got a boner. And the guy's, like, decked out in riot gear with, like, two fucking, you know, nightsticks. And it's about how his wife was attacked. She was a policewoman, and she got attacked, and she's crippled. And so he just goes out at night in this, like, he works his day job, but he goes out at night in this riot gear, and he just fucking pummels, you know, people, mostly people that are committing crimes, or they look like they're shiesty. He just beats the shit out of them. Pretty cool concept, I think. But that's the plot, and it's really appealing. It's just that I thought it would be more, like, psychological with between him and his wife, but it's like, I don't know, it doesn't want to have any teeth, and it just wants to be kind of bro shit. Like, the guy's, like, always, like, going crazy and, like, tearing things apart, and, like, when he's not in riot gear, and I don't know, it just doesn't achieve that. Have you guys ever seen Rampage?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
The Uwe Boll film?
Uwe Boll?
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. You know how it's like, you get to meet him before... Yeah, it is, but... I mean, it is shit, and it has a trilogy for some weird reason.
I didn't really like that. I felt really bad watching it.
Exactly. But it achieved that. Yeah. That's what it's supposed to do. Even though the movie's not good, it makes you feel like you're watching something you're not supposed to.
Yes, I do agree with that.
It feels very real, because the reason why it feels real is because you really get to know that kid. And then you watch something that you know what's going to happen, and you hear about it, and you see it all the time. So when it all unfolds, it has a big impact. You may not like the movie, and that, I don't think you're supposed to. Not because it's Uwe Boll, but I just don't. I think it's a very touchy subject. Mm-hmm. But the only reason they reached that is because if you had just had a movie about a guy shooting up a place, it wouldn't have been a big deal. But being that you actually, you know, get up close and personal with him, and it's very invasive into his life and invasive into his normal, like, well-being and his normal, like, social life, it really affects us when he puts on the gear and he starts killing innocent people. That's what I should have felt with the Demolisher, I felt, but I just, it didn't achieve it. And it also has a synth score and like some like new wave 80s music. And it feels really good when that starts playing, but like it doesn't get that character right, it feels. So, anyways, watch it. Tell me what you think.
What was the name of it?
The Demolisher.
The Demolisher.
And it's like when he finds you, run. And like it feels like it's going to be like some kind of like Deadbeat at Dawn, Escape from New York, Maniac Cop movie, and it's none of those. I like vigilante movies, and it doesn't feel like a vigilante. It feels like there's some dudes like having some aggro problems. Next up was Arrow Video. I tell you what, man, these guys released Suture, which was a movie that I saw for the first time this year. It was made in 1993. I went on about it pretty hardcore on one of our shows. I mean, we're also talking about, like, in the UK, these guys are releasing Night of the Hunter. They're, you know, fucking releasing Woody Allen movies. And then they release Microwave Massacre. And it's like, how cool is that? That you have a company that is so diverse that they want to release, like, pure, like Rafifi, for crying out loud, and they release Jules Dassin films. But then they're like, oh, remember that movie that came out where the guy fucking eats people because he gets tired of, you know, special lunches when he's on his construction site, so he ends up killing his wife and then eating her body, and then he has a need to feed for people, so he dates women and then he eats them. Like, that's the fucking plot of Microwave Massacre. And it's just, and it's so goofy. It's the movie that probably Troma wishes that they were completely behind and did. But it has such, and the reason why I like Microwave Massacre is because we have, you know, Jackie Vernon is the fucking lead in the film. If you have any idea who Jackie Vernon is, he's a hilarious comedian. And he just becomes this cannibal. And you look at Jackie Vernon and you're like, man, you're the star of this movie too. Like, that's hilarious. Like, you just don't see a lot of, you know, they always pick the really clean cut, good looking people. Like, Jackie Vernon's like in his 60s and, you know, he's overweight and he's still funny. But like, it's like, thank you for picking somebody. It's just a normal looking person because people are like, oh, wow, that guy's fat. You know, that always happens in fucking horror films. It's like, ugh. No, like, that's a normal looking person. That's the more believable than the fucking soap opera characters that we have most of the time. And, you know, it's just an odd placement as a star, but it works so perfectly. And, I mean, it is a ridiculous movie. It's really, really funny. And it's pure 80s. It's pure 80s, like schlock and sleaze, and it's perfect. So definitely pick that up. I don't know if a lot of people watch Microwave Massacre, because mainly because of the price point, not because it's the movie, but the price point of these Arrow titles are pretty high up there. But trust me, Microwave Massacre is one of the better insane 80s. Kind of comedies. If you love Troma stuff, you'll love this. Even a non-Troma fan like myself, I enjoy Microwave Massacre quite a bit. And it's also another movie that's just, they give like this great treatment and do basically brand new interviews. You know, taking the time to go through and releasing a movie like this and not just doing a bare bones disc is pretty admirable. Like, going above and beyond. I mean, they did the same thing. Like, even though the Satan's Blade fucking special features are really goofy, but those are so humorous because they're so weird. But it works 100%. And since we're talking about Arrow, I got around to watching Slugs, because it looks like it looks like Arrow is going through Image's catalog, because they're doing Chud, they're doing this, they're doing Vamp, so that means that we're going to probably get Dead Heat, probably Reanimator, some other probably cool shit. Too bad they didn't get Assault on Precinct 13. But anyways, that's fucking Screen Factory did the exact same fucking transfer on that shit, and it looks like garbage. So anyways, I don't know, like, I feel it's, here's the thing, is that I get a little, I guess, horror warped, I guess you could say. I was at Fantastic Fest, and I don't know if I mentioned this on the last show. Stop me if I did, Sean, if you actually listen to me when I talk.
Okay.
We were talking about horror, and BJ, you could probably speak on behalf of this too, is that when they do like these all-night horror things, they do these like 24-hour horror marathons, 12-hour horror marathons, I always look at the lineup. And we looked at like Dismember the Alamo, which they do, like, this is like their fifth or sixth year they're doing it. And, you know, the films that played, they played, you know, The Beyond, they played Pieces. And I'm like, why would
Pieces
they...
Pieces is playing at our at the one that we're doing. I'm almost positive it's going to be like the same lineup as what you guys had.
Yeah, so it's like, I hear those and I'm like, I don't want to go to that because I've seen all those movies. I want something crazy. Like, why are they showing movies that everybody has seen? Well, that's not the case, apparently. Because I was talking to people that go to those frequently, and they always ask before the show, they're like, how many people have seen this? And the whole entire audience raises their hand. We were at Fantastic Fest, one of the biggest genre festivals in the world. Before Phantasm played, they said how many people haven't seen Phantasm. At least 90% of the theater raised their hand. And I sat back and I was like, what?
No, like, way.
It was ridiculous. And it made me feel really good because in a way I felt like I was watching the movie for the first time again, because that's what I love to do, is I love to show people movies that I've seen, to watch their reactions, to see if it impacted them the same way it did me. And so that I was like, oh, fuck it. I guess these horror things are doing it right, because they're playing, because I was talking to Jay Hawkinson and he was like, yeah, he's like, when they play The Beyond, most of the audience, because we're so saturated in horror every day, I guess we don't think about general public and the general horror fan. You know, we think about the hardcore people, but I mean, even you, Sean, we'll talk about movies and there's stuff that we grew up with that you haven't seen.
Yeah.
It's the same thing, you know?
Like, I'm even experiencing that now where I'm, you know, we're trying to do promotions for Silence the Musical, and we're like, yeah, it's a musical based on Silence of the Lambs. And it's definitely, like, you have to have seen the movie to understand a lot of the jokes. And, you know, I'm trying to promote this show, and I am overwhelmed with the amount of people that have never seen the Silence of the Lambs. And I'm like, this movie won a fucking Oscar. Like, if there is anything that is mainstream horror, it is this. And people just were like, yeah, I've never actually seen it. Like, I know, you know, The Mask, and I know the Buffalo Bill talk, but I only know that from Clerks 2. And I'm like, what? Like, what the fuck? I don't know. Like, sometimes I think it's really hard for me to realize that, because, you know, I'm just so immersed in it, and it's such a major part of who I am and what I like, that I forget that, you know, people exist that don't know anything about it, you know? Like, like our setup, or our 12 Hours of Terror that's coming up this weekend has Pieces, and I'm really excited about it because I've never seen Pieces on the big screen. And they were advertising it at Cinema Wasteland, which Cinema Wasteland is like a hardcore convention in the sense that the movies that they celebrate there are movies that no one fucking remembers or talks about. Like, they did a Street Trash reunion, for God's sakes. Like, for people like us, like, that's amazing, that's super cool, but everyone else is like, it's not The Walking Dead, I don't know what the fuck that is. And even there, people are like, whoa, Pieces? Like, I've never actually seen that. And I'm like, what? What? Who are you people?
Yeah. So, like, but when stuff comes
up... Oh, God. Like, sorry. Sorry
but it's for... No, it's fine. I'm glad you said something because, like, you know, it makes me... Like, here's the thing is that I don't want to be that person like, oh, man, you haven't seen Slugs? Are you a fucking idiot? No, it's like, man, you haven't seen Slugs? Like, I would want to watch that movie with you. Like, that's how I feel. Like, I never, like, you have those horror elitists that are like, oh, wow, you've never seen Reanimator? Like, oh, number one, fucking Reanimator's not all that great, motherfucker. Ooh.
You shut your whore mouth.
I'm just kidding. I like Reanimator. But, you know, it's just like people always make people feel, you know, they belittle them when they're like, oh, you haven't seen that. Well, you know, I never want to do that. So, like, if you haven't seen Slugs, good for you because you're in for a fucking treat. If you've seen it, then you know how great it is. But Slugs is one of those movies that, like, I feel like I remember, like, I had a really funny experience happening with this. This is really, like, this is a true story. This doesn't sound real, but it is. So, I would rent movies all the time when I was little. When there was sexy time in the movies, I would rewatch those portions, you know, when I was in bed, pop in the tape and rewatch it and, you know, do a little hanky panky. Sometimes my parents would go over next door. It'd be really funny if my mom listened to this show. My parents would go next door and play cards, with the neighbors. So Slugs was one of those movies that I popped in for the first time watching it, was really digging it, and there's a sex scene in the movie that could be considered pretty sexy for, you know, a 9-year-old kid. Maybe 11. I don't know. I can't remember how old I was. But I got into it, and if you know how your VCRs are set up, you could do your AB playback and just kind of, you know, you'd have that portion where you could not AB playback. That's on DVDs. What was the tape position thing? God, auto. You guys, BJ, you never watch porn? It's
the sorry, I was shoving food in my mouth. What?
No, it's on your tapes, like on VCRs. There was a thing because basically when you take your parents' porn and put it in, you don't want to get off of that section that they left off of because they might see it. So what was the button that you could hit and then you could play it but rewind it and it would stop at that position?
I have no idea. What kind of newfangled VCR did you have, Spaceman?
No, this was a very, 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 very common thing.
Oh, I have no idea. Mine definitely didn't have that. That's crazy, though. I wish I would have known about that.
It's on everything.
Is it?
Yeah, it's
well, I'm also a small child compared to you, so forgive me.
Yeah, and you're younger. You would have had this for sure.
I have no idea. Maybe I just grew up not knowing how to actually use my VCR. We sure as shit didn't ever set the clock on it, so...
No, it was blinking all the time?
Yep, because I had no idea how to set it.
My mom didn't either, so she always like had a rag on top of the VCR to block the button. But anyways, it was this button that you could hit. So basically, when you put your tape in, you could hit the button, and it would mark the tape to where if you rewound it, that's where it would stop. So basically, I hit it in the beginning of that sex scene, and then the sex scene would end, and then I would hit rewind, and then it would stop and play again. Kind of like the AB thing where you could repeat scenes on, you know, DVDs and stuff. You basically a loop in a way, I guess you could say. So there's a way to loop a VCR, but it was mainly just, I think it was invented for porn for kids, to be honest with you. Because once you found out that button existed, it was a lot easier. You didn't have to remember because you're all nervous getting the tape anyway. Like, you're going to forget, you know, was it before the money shot, after the money shot, during the money shot? Like, what happened? So anyways, long story short, I was doing that. And I kind of, you know, did my thing and then fell asleep. So I was, like, half naked. And, you know, I locked my bedroom door. So my parents came home and I fell asleep. So the tape's still playing, you know, not that sequence because it doesn't, I had to hit rewind for it to loop. So the movie's still playing. I'm like, have my pants off. My mom's banging on my bedroom door, yelling because I didn't answer the front door because I was sleeping. So I'm like trying to scramble to pull up my pants and like trying to like, I'm half asleep, have my pants off, trying to cover up that I didn't masturbate in my room while you guys were over there to the movie Slugs with the sex scene. And if anybody knows the scene I'm talking about, the guy gets eaten and his girlfriend gets eaten like right after. So it's not that appealing. But hey, it's boobs. What do you want? So I don't hear you guys laughing. So now I feel embarrassed telling that story. So, Slugs is out on Blu-ray, and I watched that sequence with a smile on my face. No hanky-panky. I save that for the vinegar syndrome stuff. So Slugs finally got a Blu-ray release. It was on DVD for years from Image. They picked it up. They did a 2K restoration from the original negative. They put plenty of special features on here, interviews with the actors, special effects guys. A great audio commentary with Chris Alexander, who's pretty funny and loves the film, and just all around good time. Feels like you're watching a movie with one of you know if you're a horror nut, you feel like you're watching a movie with like another fan talking about the movie, making fun of it. But it's a really fun movie, but it's completely absurd too because they're literally man-eating slugs.
Yeah, they have like mouths and teeth.
But they're slugs.
Yeah.
The thing that would... It's like... There's so many things in this movie don't match up. Number one, slugs are eating people. Number two, like... Spoiler alert. They like find... Like they're talking about where the lair is in this, and they're like, oh, we're just going to kill that. We'll kill the slugs. What about the fucking million of slugs that are out attacking people? Like, did they all come home? No, because they're slow, motherfucker. They get lost. They're not driving. They're not fucking riding back to the hive. No, they're out and about. They're eating people. Like, you know, also the guy that fucking eats one, what the fuck happens? Why do you, like, explode? Like, there's so many, there's three sequences where people literally explode because they have slugs in them.
Yeah.
What is happening?
Who knows?
Dude, and the fucking music in this movie doesn't make any sense whatsoever. It's so intense. The music's so intense, and you're like, oh, shit. Like, they're driving down the road, you're like, oh, man, this music's intense. And then they stop, and you're like, oh, fuck. This movie's about slugs. Like, what the fuck? Like, it's almost like a comedy because they're putting that music in it.
Yeah, I need to watch this again. Last time when I first saw it, I was pretty intoxicated. So I'm excited to finally sit down and watch this.
But
in HD,
the main guy, he's so charismatic. He's so great. Was it Michael Garfield? Which you'll recognize. He plays in a lot of fucking movies and shit. So. You know, he's very charismatic. He's got a great on-screen presence. But my favorite part is that he, like, finds out about the man-eating slugs first. And he prefaces each time he tells people, you're not going to believe this. We have man-eating slugs. But when anybody tries to tell him something, he's like, no, I don't believe it. He, like, denies, like, everything till he's blue in the face. Like, people telling him, like, what's – like, this is our thing. Like, hey, the slugs are living underground. Oh, I don't believe they're living in the sewer, no. I found a whole entire eaten dog down there. Oh, no. Man-eating slugs wouldn't do that. Like, it's very much like David the Rock Nelson in Devilant. This is twice I've mentioned David the Rock Nelson.
David?
Bravo, Brett.
Dwayne?
No, David the Rock Nelson.
David the Rock Nelson. Sorry. Getting
Are you like
with Dwayne the Rock Johnson?
Well, dude, fucking David the Rock Nelson will tell you there's only rock, only one rock in his life. And that's him.
All right.
So anyways, he has this movie called Devil Ant. And in the film, David the Rock Nelson plays multiple characters in his film, and he talks to himself, and he plays the detective, he plays the victims. And so, like, there's this one sequence, and I think it's Devil Ant, Josh Johnson can correct me, is that he's playing the detective, and he's on the phone, and he's getting this call saying that there's this Devil Ant. And he's like, oh, no, I don't believe in any Devil Ant. He's like, but the Wolf Man? Yeah, I believe in the Wolf Man. Sharp teeth, a lot of hair, yeah. But the Devil Ant? That's a bunch of bullshit. I don't believe that at all. And he just, like, goes, and it's comical, but he goes through, like, all this shit about how he doesn't believe, but he believes in, well, he believes in all this shit but the Devil Ant. And that's kind of what I felt like in Slugs. Like, every time you try to tell this guy something, even though he's the one that discovers the man-eating slugs, he kind of shuns everybody away. Like, he has a preface every time he talks to somebody, this is crazy. But, I mean, you think he would learn. I'm just saying. It's a fucking fun movie, though. I'm not trying to talk people out of it by any means. But it's a lot of fun. It's ridiculous. It's crazy. Go watch it. Next up was...
Dude, how many more do you have left? We're going on almost an hour and a half of What's on Your Doorstep.
Hey, people like this shit.
I was just going to say that.
We still have, like... 8 movies to talk about, at least.
We're not going to be talking that long about fucking corporate assets. So, next up was, I talked about this last year, Fantastic Fest. Sean, have you watched The Mind's Eye yet?
I keep telling the PR person I'll be watching it, so I'm going to be watching it this week. Tomorrow, actually.
That means no. So... Joe Bigos, he followed up with Almost Human with The Mind's Eye. Even though this quote is out of context from Rob Hunter from Film School Rejects, the quote is on the front, the best Scanners sequel we never got. That's a great quote. However, it's out of context. He's saying at most the best sequel to Scanners that we never got. But anyways, it's very much like a Scanners type thing set in like 1990. Joe Bigos does all his like little homage stuff. Almost Human, I felt like there was a lot more heart. I really loved Almost Human quite a bit. This one felt a little cheap. Didn't feel like it was all there. But let me know what you guys think. I've watched it twice. I'm like, nah. It's okay.
Yeah.
I enjoy it.
I'll report back next week, and I should be getting a review up on the site this week.
Oh, good job, Sean. Mm-hmm. So this is my last one, as you can, like, breathe.
God bless.
which is my favorite one. This is my five-star film. I got to see this last year, and it's just released on Blu-ray, I think this past Tuesday. Was Unearthed Films put this out. They put out Francesca, which is a modern giallo film. One of probably the better giallo films. Follows suit of the style, the formula. Very generic in that aspect. But it's really impressive of how they made it. There's a behind-the-scenes featurette, which I will get to, because I really hope they talk about how they made this movie look the way it did. It feels like they filmed it with just whatever and then put fucking 15,000 filters on this movie, but at times it truly feels like it's right out of the 70s. Great soundtrack. The filmmaker behind this kind of did everything with, I don't know if it's brothers or brother and sister, but they did the music, they wrote it, they produced it, they directed it, but it's literally perfect. It's such a great, like, it's not even, you can't even say it's a throwback because they don't really acknowledge any other giallos. They kind of just do their own thing, and that's what I loved about it. I think that's why Amir... that came out in like 2009 works so well. It's because in Barbarian Sound Studios, because like, oh, we're not going to do homages or anything. We're going to make a giallo film, a modern giallo film. and do it our way. This, they make it feel like it's in the 70s just by the look of the film. However, and also technology, but it just, it feels so good and it hits everything right. Like, these people that made this film were obviously like huge, huge Giallo lovers, and just hit every point from the creepiness level to the kills to the story, and good God, the ending's so fucking good. And just all around a great film. Put forth the money. It's a little bit more expensive. Unearthed Films was always cheap, but they're doing like these fucking huge packs now where they're doing a Blu-ray, DVD, soundtrack, and like limited collector's edition box, so it gets a little pricey. But you get the soundtrack, and the soundtrack's really, really fucking good. It's like its own thing. It's not like reminiscent of Goblin or, you know, Morricone, even though I think they were obviously inspired by Morricone more than they were Goblin by any means. But they hit all the notes correctly, and that's what's so fascinating about the film, is because we're watching a modern Giallo film that if you screened it to me, not knowing as much as I know, like if you screened it to some rando, like they would totally believe this shit was made in the 70s. At times you can tell, like, by the movement of the people and the camera movement, it dates it a little bit. You're like, oh shit, this isn't old. But for the most part, they keep it up probably 98% of the time. And it's pretty goddamn impressive. So if you like Giallo films, if you like horror films, watch it. If you like Giallo films, you're going to be in for a real big fucking treat, because modern Giallo's dead. Or Giallo's dead. Modern Giallo is trying to put movies out. They do it maybe 2 movies a year, if that. So it's pretty cool that people are doing this, and especially doing it well. So definitely pick it up.
And now the doorstep is closed. Holy shit.
All right, so we're going to try to dive into some of these Vinegar Syndrome titles that have come out over the past few months. We're going to dig into some things that were released in July and their August package. Let's go ahead and start with these the Rudy Ray Moore. What do you guys think? We can look, because we had a Rudy Ray Moore come out in July and then August. So we got Petey Wheatstraw came out in July, and then in August we followed up with Disco Godfather. Now, we've talked about Rudy Ray Moore quite a bit on the show already, and his movies kind of have a style, and they kind of have their own
style. They're about him.
Yeah, there's the Rudy Ray Moore formula.
Words out of my mouth. Sorry, I'm like dying as I'm laughing.
It's very much his own pet projects, very much all about him. And you're always going to have some sort of dance sequence. You have some stand-up comedy from him, and you're going to have some sort of musical performances as well. So I think Disco Godfather and Petey Wheatstraw hit all of those, right? And it's just the subject matter is just different. We got Petey Wheatstraw, which is a man that basically gets given powers by the devil. Is it to save his disco or his club again? I mean, he always has a club he's trying to save, right?
I think you're getting the movies
Help me out here. I'm getting him confused.
I think you are getting movies confused.
Because there's another one of his movies where he had to save his bar, his club.
He's got to save something.
Remind me what Petey Wheatstraw is about, Brad.
Well, number one.
I'm getting across the Disco Godfather right now.
Well, here's the thing. Number one is that Rudy Ray Moore did his, Human Tornado in Dolomite, which that was his Dolomite character. And being that, that was all fun and games, he went on to do, I think Disco Godfather was next. Or actually, no, I think Petey Wheatstraw was next. Check out the years
Petey
on
Wheatstraw
that.
Was 77, Disco Godfather 79.
Okay. So, This is the Kung Fu, because now I'm getting confused. This was the Kung Fu one, right? Petey Wheatstraw's.
He has Kung Fu, but he, yeah.
Right. Yeah, Disco Godfather is the kind of the devilish one.
No. Petey Wheatstraw is the devilish one.
Then you know what? I'm done. Because now I'm confused. Here's the thing, is that I love Rudy Ray Moore, but his movies tend to run together. I can't tell you what happened to Human Tornado or Dolomite. I know what happened in them, but I get them confused.
All I know is in Petey Wheatstraw, he, like, these really badly made up demons come out and he has to fight them.
Because they kill his friends.
Yes.
Because that's what happened. So this was the Kung Fu ladies. They have the room of the Kung Fu ladies. Right? Am I getting a total another movie Holy screwed shit. Up right now?
Yeah, okay. Wow. I thought this would be easy, but now that I'm sitting here thinking about them, I'm like, they're both kind of crossing streams.
Well, it's been like probably like months since I've seen that.
So here we go. I'm going to read the synopsis.
The reason why read the synopsis. The reason why we're getting these confused is because Disco Godfather has a lot of devil imagery. Like, it has like that fucking, like, there's some really like creepy fucking scenes in Disco Godfather.
Yeah.
So, but anyways, yeah. So. I'm going to start over on this note, is that Rudy Ray Moore is back and he's doing another character, which, what was his name? Petey Wheatstraw. Let's just do that one.
Yeah.
So this was the film. And I'm going to get this. He is a comedian. He is a stand-up comedian. We can't say that. He's in the nightclub.
He does Kung Fu.
He does Kung Fu, and then his friends are killed.
Him and his friends are killed. And he ends
up
in hell.
And his friends are killed.
Are you there?
This is where he fights the devil's daughter, right?
Yeah, he ends up in hell. He works out a deal with the devil to come back. And the devil says, all right, I'll let you come back. I'll give you this awesome pimp cane. But
pimp cane.
You have to marry my daughter, and she's ugly as hell. Literally, and he basically spends the rest of the movie wielding these powers and basically trying to trick the devil in many little trying to trick the
Lucifer.
Devil. Yeah,
trying the fucking to the guy is Lucifer. That
yeah,
is fucking hilarious.
He has like a little jogging suit and he ends up jogging. He's like, "Hey, buddy." So the whole rest of the movie is him trying to cheat the devil and not have to marry his ugly daughter.
Well, because
basically is the
because he says that plot. he'll grant him life if he marries the devil's daughter,
right?
And then he tries to figure out because he tries to get out of it then because of the ugly daughter.
Yes, that's basically the plot. There we go. We got there. Holy got there. Shit! So that's Petey Wheatstraw. So basically, Petey Wheatstraw. It's the basic Dolomite Rudy Ray Moore stuff, just with that plot, and hijinks ensue, and that's about it.
I promise I watched the movie. Rudy Ray Moore. I promise I watched it. It's just that your movies run together so bad.
Well, he does have that form. Like, there's a formula he has. You know, you're gonna have. The stand-up, you're going to have the same types of things in each of these films. It's just what's the theme of the film, what's the plot of the film. So that's that. Petey Wheatstraw. The disc looks great, you know, as usual. And they're continuing this interview with Rudy Ray Moore. So they got I Dolomite Part 3 on here, and it's a lot of fun listening to him talk about those. So Disco Godfather. Let's try to get this plot going on this one.
Disco Godfather, I know.
There's
because
this
he
new
operates,
drug
he,
in the community.
Angel Dust.
Angel Dust.
So basically, he plays a cop or a retired cop. He was a cop. He's a cop.
But he's the king of the disc. He's the Disco Godfather.
But he has another disco in this movie that he runs and operates. This is the thing. If you pulled out the fucking disco to these movies, they would probably make more sense.
Because there's so there, this saying. One, there's so many disco dance sequences, and he's in that like sequined weird disco suit, and he throws down some disco moves.
Put your weight on it. That's what he says. And it's actually this one is a little bit more tame.
Yeah, because it was rated PG.
Oh, it was?
Yeah.
Oh shit! I didn't know that.
He wanted a message to like an anti-drug message. He was very big on making sure this film had an anti-drug message. And there's like one scene in the film that's just like this lecture on how bad drugs are and all this stuff. Yeah, this one, like, he actually had a message he wanted to get across.
Well, this is one of his later movies, so that would probably make sense. Until he did like Return of Dolomite and stuff,
right?
So, but I mean, this is his like what his fifth movie, and then I mean he came back as Dolomite, but I mean, this is kind of the end of his career.
Yeah,
like he was in movies and shit, but I think this was his last, like his last big movie that he starred in. Because I honestly don't think these movies caught on to the extent. Because I remember Disco Godfather being a little bit more memorable, but that's because of the imagery and the crazy batshit stuff that happens in the film.
Right.
Like the ghost lady that shows up, you know. But I mean, there's even there's obviously more kung fu and fighting in the film. But like, there's this really like, I guess it has to deal with the drugs. Is that there's a lot of like hallucinations, I guess you could say. Because like he looks at people and then totally has like that. I don't know. It's just that there's a lot of just weird imagery in the film, and when you watch it, it doesn't feel like a Rudy Ray Moore movie because it's just so kind of off the wall. And unlike anything that he's ever done.
Well, those sequences, but like I said, the formula of the film, like, very much is Rudy Ray Moore. But yeah, I mean, Petey Wiestra and Disco Godfather, he's trying things a little bit different with the imagery for sure. Like he's trying to go a little darker, trying to be a little bit different than just like a standard kind of blaxploitation film like the Dolomite ones.
Yeah.
But I mean, I never figured I'd be watching this much Rudy Ray Moore this year. I can't believe I've seen so many Rudy Ray Moore.
The thing is that you watch them because they're fun, but you watch them back to back, you don't know what you watch.
I made the mistake of watching them back to back. Because in the same day.
Yeah, because I think Petey Wiestra and Disco Godfather go hand in hand, but they're completely different from Dolomite and Human Tornado, but those two movies are the same movie.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but it really is because it's like, hey, we should do a movie. Okay, cool. I'll be in it. I'll be the star. Put everything around me. What should we do?
Yeah.
That's kind of how these movies were made, it feels like. So you can't really be too creative because it's all the same shit. But fun nonetheless, but it's just, you know, it can be a little he can be a little overwhelming.
Yeah. BJ, did you get a chance to see Disco Godfather?
I did get a chance to see Disco Godfather.
What are your thoughts?
I mean, it's fun. I think that all of the Rudy Ray Moore films are a lot of fun. I want to do a movie marathon of just movies with disco in the in the title of it, like the Disco Exorcist and Disco Godfather. But I'm almost positive I talked about Disco Godfather on the last episode I was on because it was, fresh on my doorstep.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Those are the Rudy Ray Moore ones. It's what a time to be living. We got Rudy Ray Moore on Blu-ray. I think all these exclusively through Vinegar Syndrome. Is there any other ones that are out that these are the only Rudy Ray Moore movies on Blu-ray?
Yeah, so yeah, but he had his box set that came out a while ago, but. Yeah, but these movies were in it, and so was his stand-up and everything. But like I said, there's just only so much Rudy Ray, Rudy Ray Moore you can take.
Yeah. Let's move on to another, to one more blaxploitation here, and we'll cover the rest of these. I want to get to the August package here soon, but one surprise for me was Candied Tangerine Man.
Yeah, I really, really, really like that.
This is directed by Matt Clymer, and the disc
Simber.
What?
What are you talking about?
It's Matt Simber. Simber. Sorry, it's dark in here. I only have like one light on. Matt Simber. Yeah.
But he's a notorious director. He's done so much cool shit.
Well, we have two movies on here. We have Candied Tangerine Man and Lady Coco. Candied Tangerine Man is about a guy. He's a pimp in the city in L.A. and doing his thing there. And then on the weekends, he goes home and he lives out, you know, out in the suburbs. And there's kind of this dichotomy with him, you know, these two separate lives. And like, I really liked that aspect of the film. Like, and I really want to see this again, to rewatch it, because I feel like there's a lot that I missed. But it's actually a really good film. Like, there's a lot going on.
It's completely different from kind of what I grew up watching Matt Simber films, because, you know, and especially being a blaxploitation film. He plays, let's see, what is his name? John Daniels, the actor.
Yeah.
So anyways, he plays, he has like the suburban, you know, husband, normal life as, Ron Lewis. And then, basically at night, he becomes the Baron. And he's kind of relentless, and he's kind of a dick, and he's, you know, he's a threat. In he like has this like normal life outside of it. He lives this double life in the film, and he gets closer and closer to knowing that his days are numbered because of the racist cops. And this movie is pretty racist.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a blaxploitation film, but it really, like, kind of, it's a little mean.
Yeah, the cops are assholes, for sure.
Right, right. No, it's just, it gets a little mean. And that's why I liked it a lot more, is because, you know, it was actually dealing like with racism, and like, he's not, I guess he is kind of a asshole pimp too, but I mean,
hey,
people fear him.
You gotta get the job done. You gotta make that bread.
I guess so. is that what you say?
That's like, what I
is
say.
That, is that
That's
like a thing?
Every day in going to the office, I walk past my boss and I'm like, psh, gotta throw down and make that bread.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just a really well-made movie. You know, Matt Simber has done incredible films. He did.
We talked
about
Which You Came from the Sea, and that, now it's starting all to click together. We talked about quite a bit, a lot about him on that episode about Which You Came from the Sea.
Yeah, I mean, he did, but he's also made some, you know, killer blaxploitation films in the past, and he has a really cool revenge one that Vinegar Syndrome owns, and I hope that they do a Blu-ray of it, called The Black Six.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he did that before Candy Tangerine Man. But he's kind of all over the place, but he, you know, he went in making, I don't know, I mean, we even take Candy Tangerine Man, but I think pairing it with Lady Coco, even though it's just same director, it is a different style of blaxploitation filmmaking, because Lady Coco is not really a blaxploitation action movie. It's very, you know, it's more of a thriller, you know, almost like a crime drama, where it's not like a normal blaxploitation film where it's about putting down the man. It's, you know, literally about a guy trying to, you know, it's basically the plot of Smoke and Aces, but not as grand as people coming after her, you know. But, you know, it's very laid back. You know, it's one of those films that takes a while to get going. Because I remember what, because this is my first time seeing Lady Coco, watching Lady Coco and thinking, it was like, man, it's just oddly paced for a black exploitation film, because we're so used to, you know, Rudy Ray Moore movies and, you know, Fred Williamson movies, of it being action packed, of, you know, killing Whitey and being violent and very funny, to being kind of a more serious take on blaxploitation, making it more of a movie, rather than, you know, something like, oh, we have this idea, we're going to do that. But definitely have a little bit of character building and, you know, things like that with kind of the relationship that builds and kind of gives that big, you know, not big, but a very intense ending and a very great ending. You know, I think, you know, Millie Perkins is really great as Lady Coco, and kind of a cool attitude. She's a cool hip lady, and you know, it's great casting, and it's very different rather than, because I mean, you think black actresses back then, immediately you think of Pam Grier. Who's the lady that played Cleopatra Jones? What's her name? It's like Vivica A. Fox's character in Kill Bill. That's what her name is. I can't think of it.
I'm trying to look. Hold on. It's like on the tip of my tongue.
But anyways, I mean, you have, you know, Cleopatra Jones.
Tamara Dobson.
That is not it. I got the wrong name. I got the wrong character, I think. But
Tamara Dobson played Cleopatra Jones.
Who am I thinking about then?
I don't know, man.
But anyways, but all those characters, we have really like badass female actresses, and we just have kind of a blend between a man, you know, and a female kind of working together, trying to get away from Whitey and all this other shit, but also blossoming a relationship rather than having guns blazing and, you know, kind of that, you know, blaxploitation attitude.
Yeah.
But both of these films are like that, you know, making the Candy Tangerine Man, making him a family man and, you know, living this double life is something completely out of the box. Cause I mean, we would have, you know, if this was a normal blaxploitation movie, he would just be a badass pimp killing people.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like he has this morality part too. It's like, oh shit.
Yeah, because he has kids, like, he has to get home to. You know, he has a wife and kids he needs to.
Yeah, like shit's getting serious. Like, shit's going down. And that's what I really like about both films, is that they stay true to the kind of the blaxploitation, you know, genre. But at the same time, they completely do their own things and are different. Because we have too many movies like Rudy Ray Moore where all the films run together. You know, a lot of Fred Williamson movies run together. They're all great by any means. I'm not putting them down. I enjoy those films quite a bit, but we get the movies confused.
Yeah.
Just like how I did just a few minutes ago, which was crazy. But I can tell you the difference between Candy Tangerine Man versus all the other blaxploitation movies. So
yeah, it's very unique. I really liked it. The print was really beat up on this one, and I'm actually surprised more people, you know, because you get a lot of people reviewing these and kind of will beat something up if it's not pristine. But this was a pretty beat up print. I kind of liked that it was that way myself. Kind of gave it a little more character. But I'm assuming that these prints were just in bad shape, and this is the best that they can get them. I almost wish that they included something in the special features more about, you know, their restoration process and you know what I mean? Because I know because that's interesting to me. So some movies they'll restore and they look pristine. Some movies they can only do, you know, only do so much. But I thought it added to the character of the film as well. But anyway, really, really good release on there. And there was a few other adult films on there that I'm just going to run off really quick. Corporate Assets, Both Ways, and then there's a double feature, Take One, and then Moving. I want to move on.
Did you watch any of these?
I did not, but I'm asking Brad, did you watch any of those, and did any of them kind of stand out?
Yes.
Which one stood out the most for those ones?
Well, number one, before we get into the porn, we need to talk about Eagles of the Night.
Well, yeah, we're going to get into the August stuff. I want to get the July stuff.
Oh, I don't know what's what. They're all great. Like, I mean, what's in this pack that we're talking about?
July pack was Candy Tangerine Man, Lady Coco, Petey Wheatstraw, Corporate Assets, Both Ways, and then Take One and Moving.
Oh, okay. Corporate Assets. I could talk about some Corporate Assets, mainly because it was the first thing I watched because it said Corporate Assets. I compare Corporate Assets a lot to kind of, Corruption, where it does a little bit. I mean, we're also talking about porno here, so you got it. Like, don't think this is fucking Godfather or some shit. So it's mainly about sex. I'm kidding. This is more of an action film, as kind of porno goes, about as action as you can get. Basically getting into the life of, you know, corporate greed and hunger, where a really, really rich man does awful things, as you can see where that's going. It's kind of it's not really a roughie, but there's a lot of rougher things. If you remember kind of Ron Jeremy's sequence of Blue Ice, where it gets a little uncomfortable. Corporate Assets is kind of like that. Mainly because, I mean, your characters in this, like, I mean, you don't have your fun-loving porn stars, which they are fun-loving porn stars, but you have Harry Reams, Jamie Gillis, and Hershel Savage in the film, which these are intimidating dudes, all in the same movie. And then you have this other guy, what's his name? I didn't really know, Eric Edwards, who is kind of a sleazy dirtbag looking dude who, you know, is the star of the film. But, it's kind of like the reason why it's, you want to talk about it is because these are the movies that were made because they wanted to do something more than porn. They wanted to put the porno in there, but they also wanted to make a movie. Very, like, when I watched it, the very first thing I thought about was Boogie Nights. You know, because of trying to make movies while doing porn at the same time, trying to make something entertaining, an action movie, you know, a thriller, at the same time, you know, doing porn, but also putting your acting shoes on and trying to play serious roles rather than, you know, the UPS man or, you know, the guy that's going to come fix the kitchen sink for, you know, 2 minutes and then you fuck. Like, these people are really, really trying to keep up these characters and get motivated and stay in character even while doing the sex, but even before and after that. And you don't get a lot of that because you get one scene here, one scene there, you know, four or five sex scenes with maybe 10 minutes of story. And people are just playing, you know, a role for a very, very short time. Here you have people undertaking larger roles and, you know, reoccurring characters in films. That's why I said it's comparable to kind of Corruption, which Jamie Gillis is in. And, you know, even Blue Ice has that. Even, you know, we talked about, what was that Ginger Lynn movie that I wasn't a big fan of that was just released? Where kind of played like that, you know, 50s like crime movie.
Even
those characters stay in character the entire time. So that's what's different about these. I'm not going to go out on a limb and say it's great, but it's different. It is a different style of filmmaking.
Right. Now, I was curious about both ways because that seems like another level of, like, the synopsis reads like a drama where you have this character who's married, but he's also has fallen in love with another man.
Yeah, no, it's the same thing. Yeah. It is, but yeah, you're right. It's about a guy that has everything. He's got a great son. He's got the job. He's got the house. He's got the wife. But he falls in love with another man, and then things kind of turn sour. Spoiler alert. Ooh, sour. A taste in his mouth. And then that was a joke. And then he basically, you know, wants to get back at him. And, you know, obviously this guy is living in the closet with the whole ordeal, doesn't want anybody to know. So when things, you know, turn for the worse, he gets scared because he obviously doesn't want this to come out that he is going both ways. but it's really cool because, you know, this obviously just isn't a straight porno. It is, but it isn't. We're dealing with homosexuality at the same time, like trying to talk about something really taboo. It's definitely not for everybody, but it's worth it if you're into these types of things, into these types of films, and want to see something, I don't know, a little bit, it's the same thing, like, I'm going to say different, that's how I define corporate assets, but that's in the straight, just porno world, you know, but this is more of a film, but wanting to kind of go outside the box, but also have, you know, some really sexy stuff in there, but, hey, you get some man-on-man action, which, hey, I know people are into that. BJ kind of said before the show that, you know, that could be a thing. Is BJ still there?
I am still here.
Did you watch Both Ways?
Both Ways?
Yeah.
Oh, I sure did.
Well, I would like to hear your thoughts on it. I'm over here talking. I don't even know what the hell I'm talking about half the time.
I think what's so cool about Both Ways is that it plays with kind of this idyllic fantasy that so many people had, but at the same time, like, that's something that was definitely prevalent in society then and is pretty prevalent in society now, but people just don't ever want to talk about it. Kind of the idea of having, you know, the all-American family, but also having, like, your gay shit on the side. I think that that's pretty commonplace, and I think that now we're just becoming more aware of it because people are not so repressed about talking about their feelings. But, like, the amount of people that I know that talk about, like, how their, like, their grandparents or their uncle or their whoever, their aunt had, like, a secret gay lover, like, on the side in their life is pretty constant. So I don't think that this is very far-fetched, and I think that that's what's so interesting is that they're, like, kind of glorifying this sexuality of that sort of situation. I don't know. I think that it's a really – I don't want to say that, you know, it's a porn piece that still resonates with us today, but I do. I think that that's what it is, and I think that it's so cool that they were talking about this subject in a time when, like, that was so taboo. Even though everyone was fucking doing it.
Yeah.
And people are still doing it now, you know?
Yeah, I dig it. Like I said, it's not for everybody, but it is something cool to see because, like, no matter what year you're in or decade, it's still relevant.
And the other thing that's so fascinating is that especially when you think of pornography and you think of bisexuality, you always think of women. Always. It's always, you know, mommy has a secret lover with the babysitter or what have you. But the fact that they're willing to discuss male bisexuality, which, you know, bi erasure is such a problem in general in our media, pornography included. But male bisexuality, like, look at fucking Constantine. Perfect example. Constantine is canonically a bisexual male, and no one ever wants to address it because, like, that's too much. That's stupid. But, you know, both ways is willing to discuss that, you know, that is a very active sexuality that, for whatever reason, we never want to talk about. Like, we have this weird mindset that men are victims of, like, the one drop rule, in the sense that, like, oh, if you've had gay sex once in your life, then you're just gay. And it's like, no, that's not how this works. So I think that it's fascinating that both of these, like, kind of lives that he's living are, you know, just as important. Just, you know, the only problem is he just picked kind of a shitty partner who wanted to ruin his life. But hey.
Yeah. But I dig it.
Yeah, I dig it a lot. I think that it's really cool. Check it out if you would like to hear about that story.
All right. And then the last, like, double feature for the July was Take One and Moving. Do you guys have anything to say about those ones, or
can we move along? I watched part of Take One. I didn't finish it, mainly because I can do both ways. However, like, I enjoy like Wakefield Poole's Bible, his film Bible.
I love Bible.
Take One is a little bit different. I don't know.
Docu-fantasy.
It's Wakefield Poole is a unique filmmaker, and he does a great job because he is so different and does kind of this performance shit and makes it more of an art house film rather than a gay porno. But it works really well. It's just, I always say this stuff's not for me. This is not for me.
This is definitely for me. I'm a big fan of Wakefield Poole. I'm a big fan of, you know, all male cinema from the 70s. It makes me sad that all male cinema isn't still like this. But I don't want to talk forever about it. But all I'll say is that if you do like Bijou or Boys in the Sand, I think that this is more closely related to that than it is, you know, both ways. This is very much so, in the realm of, like, the classic distinctive gay pornography from the 70s. Like, when you think of gay pornography, you're thinking of Wakefield Poole, whether you know it or not. Hmm. And I think that this is kind of an example of that.
Now, this is kind of, it says docu-fantasy. Like, so it's Wakefield Poole's Take One, and then there's a bonus feature of Moving.
Mm-hmm.
They consider it a bonus feature on here, I guess. So is this like a documentary style, or what's, do you know how we approach this film?
Yeah, it's more of an aesthetic.
Okay.
I would say, than I would say a style. He's kind of playing with a lot with this, cause at some moments it feels very performance art.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, if you're looking for a traditional by-the-book pornography, you're not going to get that. But if you're looking for kind of that, like, introspective, like, classic 70s male porno, like, kind of combined with, I don't really even know how to explain this. I'm sorry. It's, like, 1 in the morning my time right now, and I'm trying to, like, analyze gay porn. I think that it's definitely not going to be one of the more palatable ones, but I think that it's so classic of that time period and of that, you know, world. I just think that it's important and it's worth checking out if that's something that you're into.
Awesome. Okay. All right. Well, let's, now, Brad, we can talk about Evils of the Night.
Oh, cool. It's really good. Moving on.
All right, really? That's all you want to say about Evils of the Night? Evils of the Night is... I had no idea what I was getting into. It's my first time watching it.
Oh, so what was your first time watching it like?
Well, it felt like they had.
And then I'm going to trap you in a
probably
this is a trick question. It felt like, trick question.
It felt like they had a script for a porno, and they decided to take out the hardcore parts of it, and then they for the all the teenagers and stuff, or whatever, 25-year-olds playing teenagers. And then they introduced this kind of weird
these guys are like 40
space vampire type plot into it. So it's funny. I don't know. It's like sleazy ish because it's kind of weird because they're it's like all the women seem to undress all the way, whereas the men seem to keep their clothes on. If that makes any sense.
Well, there's even a doggy style scene where the woman is stripped down completely. And
yeah,
the guy
and he
still
has his pants
jeans
on.
Mm-hmm. Because that's usually how it works. Dudes are afraid to show their dicks, and girls are like, "Fuck it."
So, right. Have you seen you said this? You haven't seen this movie before. Well,
this was ridiculous.
I'm going to prove that you're wrong.
Okay.
Because you have seen this movie before, because I believe on when we were doing VHS,
Oh my God, shit.
We covered Evil Town.
Yes.
Which there's a lot of footage from Evil Town in this movie. So
I thought, okay. I was so, watching this going like, I think we, okay.
Marty Rustem in the 70s made a movie called Evil Town. He did some, I don't think he directed it completely, but he did part of Evil Town. So basically they kind of just recut it and have some scenes from Evil Town in Evils of the Night.
Because those two janitor type guys or whatever, right? Yeah, those
what?
Guys. Isn't that those two like mechanic or janitor type guys in this one? They're in both, right?
You talking about Kurt and Fred?
Yeah.
Neville Brand and Aldo Ray?
Yeah.
Well, Sean, here's the trick question. What movie did you watch?
Evils of the Night?
Wait, you didn't, did you not watch? Well, Evils of the Night, you did, wait, did you not watch Evil Town then?
No, we watched Evil Town.
Oh, yeah. No. All the alien stuff is Evils of the Night.
Okay, yes.
The sex stuff is from Evil Town.
Oh my God.
Because the actors don't match up. Because the actors that get abducted and killed, sometimes you don't even see it. It's not the same actors.
Yeah.
They just have sequences. So it's really bizarre of how it all unfolded. And the thing is, it's not talked about enough. Like, people don't talk about how these two movies are. It's very similar to Night Train to Terror, which is, a bunch of movies in one. Even one of them is a full entire movie, but they cut up clips to make another one. Like, it's bizarre that, you know, they do this. And the same thing is, like, you know, we have actors like Neville Brand and Aldo Ray that I think this is Neville Brand's last movie, mm-hmm. but like you have like some really great actors and like this is their like towards their last movies. Like you would say that Neville Brand's last movie is Evils of the Night? Like what kind of life is that? Like to go down in history is that's your last movie. It obviously not Aldo Ray. Aldo Ray's last movie was Shock Him Dead.
Oh wow.
So, but that's what I love about these guys is that, you know, Aldo Ray, Neville Brand, what's that guy's last name? Not Walter Matthau, the other guy. Shit. Like, but John Carradine,
Julie fucking Newmar.
Julie Newmar, Jesus Christ, I forgot. Yeah, she's in Evils of the Night.
She sure is.
But all these guys, they were doing horror. Like, they did comedy on television, and then, like, towards the end of their career, they were just all doing horror films, you know? What's that movie called? Here, let me look at it. Alone, what is it? Alone in the Dark. That's the guy that's in it. But, like, Jack Palance is in that movie. Who am I thinking? Martin Landau. That's who I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
Fucking Alone in the Dark has Jack Palance. Donald Pleasance obviously isn't new to horror. And Martin Landau. Jack Palance and Martin Landau played in a lot of horror films together. But like, you know, it's just crazy that these guys did that. They loved it. And I don't know. There's something. Evils of the Night, I wouldn't say is a great movie. But it is bizarre and fun and kind of crazy. And I think Mike Sandlin pointed out is that why is the Millennium Falcon on the front?
Yeah.
If you look at the front, because they have a spaceship in the front of the movie.
Straight up the Millennium Falcon on this poster, which makes no sense. Like, how did they get away with that?
I don't know. But I do love that cover art. So, but this is an upgrade because Gorgon Video released this 2 years ago. And then, you know, Vinegar Syndrome sweeps in behind and does a better transfer. But Marty Rustem, the director of this, even though he only like directed like, probably he directed Evil Town in this. I don't know if he directed anything else. However, he directed some killer fucking movies. Like, he has some shit that he produced that was completely like off the wall. So like he did shit, now I'm drawing a blank. He did Please Don't Eat the Babies, which is on a duo pack with Barracuda. Barracuda is a terrible, terrible movie. Don't think it's like about killer fish because it's not. But he did, you know, Eaten Alive, of course, with Toby Hooper. He did Psychic Killer, which we just talked about not too long ago. He did Pets. But he had such this fascination with like psychedelic horror and like psychotronic shit where like you're rubbing your head trying to figure out exactly what you're watching. Like, he'd love to do off the wall stuff. And I wish that we had more producers like that, that took a chance with scripts. Because just take Eaten Alive, Please Don't Eat the Babies, Psychic Killer, and Pets. I mean, we talked about Psychic Killer. You've seen that one, Sean.
Yeah.
And have you seen Eaten Alive, Toby Hooper film?
Is that that's the crocodile? Not yet. It's on somebody to watch.
In your watch pile. So, jerk. But you have such a unique man that wants to produce alternative cinema, and I think that was really, really cool. And we needed more people like him because that's how these movies got made. But going back to Evils of the Night. That's definitely something that he got behind that was just really fucking weird. And, you know, since his Evil Town didn't do well, he just recuts it, still owns it, recuts it, and basically fills in the gaps into the movie that he just filmed about aliens abducting. These are the worst teenagers ever. Like, the only thing that he didn't know how to do is just how to create a person. Because the things that happen in this movie between kids, like, it's like somebody that has never ever met a teenager writing teenagers.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, how's he going to do this? How's he going to get this girl's attention? Oh, he's going to rub sand all over her and seaweed. Yeah. And then there's going to be a fun sequence where she dumps it on him and they're all going to laugh and run into the lake.
And that lake did not look sanitary.
Oh my dude, they're in the lake. There's like, it's a fucking swamp. Like, I live in Florida. That's a fucking swamp. You don't swim in that. Those girls probably got infections.
Oh,
and
totally.
Things probably crawled up urethras and shit. But it's just really, and like, there's that one sequence where like they're testing each, it's been a while since I watched Evils of the Night, but there's a sequence, if I remember, where they're holding his hand over the fire counting, how high he can get up to before he has to remove his hand. And the number's like in the 50s or 60s. There's no fucking way, Rustam, that that's going to happen. Like, how, why was that an idea? And then the one guy basically threatens to like take out his cock and put it over the fire. How long can I leave my dick over the fire? Like, is this like this, that how we thought these teenagers were? And I know that these people are like 40, like doing these acting. It's been so long. They've been a teenager. You think someone would say, dude, this is not how people are. Like, we're not even talking about kids anymore. We're just talking about people. Like, it's just a very, very bizarre script and just weird all around. And that's why it's great, is that it is so unique and doesn't, like, you don't know where it's going. And I don't even remember how it fucking ends up. Like, I remember Aldo Ray's character is smashed by the car.
Right.
And then Neville Brand is smashed by the car. Aldo Ray is like,
I don't remember.
He has like the standoff with, but even the sequence where they're like tied there. I think there's one part where they're tied up in a garage and like their hands are like around like pillars in the garage. And the one girl like miraculously just how some gets free. And then she starts working on the other girl instead of the big muscle guy that could possibly help them and knock people out. But,
yeah, because all three of them are like tied up in the room, right? Like the basement.
Yeah. And then it's just the choices in the movie are just really bizarre. And that's what makes it so funny. But it really is kind of porn horror. Like, there's just so much sex. And like the plot of just abducting teenagers and then sucking their blood so they can live another 100 years. Like, what the fuck is happening? Like, you know, I don't know. But anyways, it's a lot of fun. It's weird. It's not even really a movie at times, it feels, but it's definitely enjoyable on that scale of liking shit like that. Yeah. So.
BG, do you have any more thoughts on Evils of the Night?
I mean, Brad just kind of took what I was going to say, and I'm extremely tired, so anything I say is probably not going to be very coherent. I love Evils of the Night. I love that it is straight-up just porn horror. I wish that we still made movies like this, because I think that they're fun. But fuck yeah, Julie Newmar for life.
Nice.
That's all I got.
We're losing everybody here. It's late, so I'm probably gonna say we're gonna have to call this episode.
No. I can talk about the next ones really quick.
you can. It is 2:30.
I gotta be up
at 4:30 in the morning.
4 in the morning. Can you in 5 minutes? Can you round up Taboo, Sex Comics, Body Girls, and Let's Get Physical?
Dude, challenge accepted.
Okay.
So, sex in the comics. I only got to watch Sex Tunes. I watched a little bit of, I think, the Funky World. It's just kind of like clips put together. But Anthony Spinelli did Sex World and stuff. He was behind it. Just kind of a odd, like, little group of cartoons and shit like that that's put together in, you know, kind of what they did for, you know, these horror movies, comedy movies, stuff like that. They put sex in, well, they were putting sex in cartoons like this as well. So, I don't know, it's kind of fun. It's definitely maybe not a must, but it's unique enough to have some fun with. We talked about Body Girls and Let's Get Physical. Yes, already, I believe. Where
they were on my doorstep.
Yep.
Yeah, Bob Chin flicks, you know, sexy, you know, spandex, sweat, stuff like that. A lot of fun. You know, very sex comedy-esque, because that's what, you know, Bob Chin is best at. And then ultimately, Kay Parker, who is awesome, who plays in a lot of these, you know, pornos. This was Taboo, which was really, really crazy. It's about incest. Yeah. It's about a woman who has a son who recently her husband leaves her. She meets her neighbor. She basically gets in. It's called Taboo. So there you go. But it's very odd because it is about incest and it is a porno. Obviously, you know, it's weird. You could watch a movie of two people having sex, complete strangers, and you're watching a porno, and then like you lean over to the person watching it and you're like, hey, you know, those two porn stars having sex. Yeah. They're supposed to be siblings in this movie. And then the person's like, ugh. It's like, wait, why does that, like, because I understand, like, how it's taboo and how it's weird, like, hearing a movie about incest. But it always, like, makes me laugh when it has to deal with, like, movies like this, like, porno, because you're watching, like, just two porn stars fuck that you know. Like, Kay Parker, she's pretty well known, you know? And then it's like, oh, that's her son she's fucking. Ugh. Nope. That's not the response that you do that movie. You're just like, oh, wow, this porno is about incest. That's weird. Because it's just a really odd thing. You just wouldn't think that pornos would go to, at this time, not now, because obviously that's a thing. Fuck your sister while she's sleeping. You know, this was a lot different, back then. It was taboo. It was, frowned upon. Now it's like a fetish.
I think the reason that it was so frowned upon is because it was the first time that they were putting in the forefront that, like, this is a fantasy that a lot of people have, and that's what's gross.
Well, I mean, yeah, the sister, brother-sister porn, or, you know, the stepmom, stepson, but, like, this is literal incest. Like,
right.
I watch a lot of porn, but is incest, like, fucking your mom, like, a thing?
There's a whole, the fucking Oedipus complex, dude. Like, what, where have you been? No. Like, this is a phenomenon that's been around since longer than pornography.
Yeah, no, I realize that, but I'm saying, is that made a lot? Because I don't stumble upon those videos.
Well,
because I know the due to the
legalities of stuff like that, like, it's the same thing as, like, you know, when they made the Triple Exorcist, they couldn't say, like, oh, Reagan's 11 years old, even though it's clearly being played by an adult, and even though it's clearly parodying a movie, like, you have to say, oh, I just turned 18, or it's illegal, in the same sense that, like, with incest porn, like, it has to be, like, stepmom, or, like, friend of dad, or something like that, because it's, like, the legalities behind all of it now. Oh. And the language are so different. So if they were allowed to, oh, abso-fucking-lutely, they would not be step-parents or step-siblings. They would be brother and sister, mother and son, father and daughter. Like, they get away with it kind of by calling them daddy, because daddy is, like, a sexual term that doesn't necessarily imply, like, birth father kind of thing. But, yeah, they just legally can't call it that anymore, because incest is illegal. So that's how it works.
The more you know, folks.
Yeah.
The more you know. You're welcome.
Thank you for that.
Good job. Good job, Brad.
Class is dismissed.
All right. So there's the July and August Vinegar Syndrome titles. We are going to prepare for the September package, and then October package is coming out. And we will be more prepared. We'll take I'm going to take notes.
No, you won't.
And we'll do a shorter What's Under Doorstep next time. Jesus.
Yeah. Hopefully we're not.
Not next time. I'm going to blow it up next time. I'm
recording at 11 in the morning.
Yeah.
Or 11 that's in the evening.
You're the jerk that wants to record at 11.
That's the hard part of the podcast.
I have rehearsal.
Us, yeah.
I have rehearsal.
BG has rehearsal. I'm on the West Coast. You guys are on the East Coast. You know, it is what it is. We're doing the best we can. We don't have all the time in the world like freaking Splathouse has.
Now we're just getting grumpy.
I'm not jealous or anything.
We're getting grumpy. We're gonna say something we don't mean.
All right. Well, want to thank all you guys for listening. Of course, head over to thescreamcast.com and check out our sponsors. Give them some love. Check out the pins. If you're collecting some pins, grab the pins. But all we ask is you check out our sponsors, grindhousevideo.com. Buy your movies from grindhousevideo.com. Of course,
go to getlapelledpins.com to purchase your own pins. But you should purchase ours first and then get lapel pins.
Yeah, you can make your
own. Or make your own pins and purchase them through Get Lapel Pins.
Yeah.
But buy ours first.
That's how you do a plug.
And of course, that's coffee shop.
This coffee is really good.
Yeah. Anyway,
and go to us
coffee right now.
This is a falling off
one
the rails.
OneOfUs.net. Thank you for hosting the show. Buy Mike Grindhouse videos.
All right. Go to thescreamcast.com/sponsors for all the information.
Go to Horpack. Buy their monthly horse.
Thanks for putting up with this episode. We'll talk to all of you guys.
Vinegar Syndrome, buy their
week.
Stuff.
All right. We're tired and delirious. Talk to you guys later.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun. Yeah.